It's time for Trip This Week in Tech. What a great show is ahead. Greg Farrell from the Packet Pushers Network is here. Ian Thompson from the Register. Of course, we're going to talk about Intel. Seems like they're really messing it up. Why we'll never get good internet in the United States unless we fight for it. And how using fitness trackers can reveal top secret information. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 651, recorded Sunday, January 28th, 2018. Occupy Fiber. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively at Stamps.com. Buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWiT. And by Audible. Audible makes getting more books in your life easy. Sign up for the Gold Plus One plan to get two free books and a 30-day free trial at audible.com/twit2. And by WordPress. Make WordPress.com your online home. Plans start at just $4 a month. Go to WordPress.com/twit and get 15% off your brand new website today. And by 23andMe.com. Start the year by learning more about your DNA. 23andMe's Health Plus Ancestry Kit is a personalized tool for understanding about how genes can influence your health. Go to 23andMe.com/twit and get $30 off each Health Plus Ancestry Kit now through January 31st. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. Today we decided, because we have two flamethrowers in-house, that we really didn't need a third. Huh? Elon Musk is in the house. Now, actually, that's the question of the week. Joining us from the Packet Pushers Net, Mr. Greg Farrell. Wonderful to have you.
Hey, last time, it's good to be back.
We had you on Skype because you had injured yourself.
Yes.
In a bar brawl, I believe.
The real story is I was walking home after an evening of refreshment. I must have misplaced my foot.
Fell right over.
Yeah, I'm healed.
Nice.
The doctors, it was all very amusing. You know, when one of these stories about data, I went to the hospital. My wife forced me to go to the hospital this time. I had previously damaged my ankle a couple of years back and thought I'll just sit at home and wait till it heals, thinking it was just sprained. And they took an X-ray and they said it's broken. And I was like, oh, God, I didn't think I had damaged it. You know, but turns out I'd actually broken it 2 years ago because it wasn't on record as being broken.
It used to be broken. Always broken.
So I spent 2 weeks with a plaster cast.
That you didn't need?
No, because I hadn't broken my ankle. I just sprained it.
This is like people who repost blog posts.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, David Bowie just died. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, dude, look at the date.
Well, the thing is that the file didn't have anything about having a broken ankle. So if they had have had in the file, you broke your ankle 2 years ago, they probably would have gone, it's a sprain, go home.
So they saw it in the X-ray.
They saw it on the X-ray.
Couldn't they tell it was not fresh?
Well, it takes an orthopedic surgeon to...
Well, who was it the plumber reading your X-ray?
On the plus side, you know, quality seating on the trains with plaster cast on.
That's Ian Thompson. He's from theregister.co.uk. And you might notice we have all three primary accents of the English Commonwealth.
We're lacking Canuck.
Canuck.
And a Kiwi.
And a Kiwi. You're right. We don't have you. We're not even I also want to welcome the Canberra Grammar School in studio today, about 30 students strong. Well, nice to have you fellas. We get a lot of groups from Australia come up, and they tour Silicon Valley. They've already been to Facebook. They've been to Seattle and Microsoft.
Oh, wow.
So, and they apparently got inside access at Facebook, which explains why this morning I woke up to a fake account.
It's these guys.
So nice to have you. Wonderful to have you in studio. And actually, now that you mention it, the story of the week, what the hell is Elon Musk making a flamethrower for the Boring Company for?
Because you can.
What is that? I don't...
Come on. It's brilliant marketing.
They're
useless. They're useless in a zombie apocalypse. You know, everyone's saying, "Well, maybe the Boring Company's gone down and opened that latter gate to hell." Flamethrowers are useless against zombies, particularly fast ones. You need a good axe. You know, it's or
Should
a cricket
I
bat.
Pre-order it? It's got to be illegal, right?
No,
it's,
no, perfectly legal.
It's legal in most states. Not legal,
it's not legal here.
There's a guy in Minnesota who was...
My producer's making up laws quickly. No, not legal here. Not.
Well, no, there was a guy in Minnesota who broadcast himself on social media using one of these things to clear the snow off his front drive. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. You know.
Now, why is Elon saying, obviously, a flamethrower is a super terrible idea, definitely don't buy one, and yet... They are apparently offering pre-orders.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, unless you like fun, is his subsequent tweet. He says these should be legal. The Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms allows throwers with flames shorter than 10 feet. So,
not really a thrower.
To me,
more
it's,
of an advanced cigarette lighter.
To me, it's like,
You got a light.
Putting a lightsaber with two sabers on either side. It's just asking for trouble.
I mean, you've got to promote your company one way or the other. And
well, it worked.
I mean, did you see that there were some corresponding articles this week about the pointlessness of the boring company, this idea of running a tunnel from one side to the other, just big enough so that you can put a car in it. And fundamentally, it restricts
why
the
is
use
that wrong?
Of it for the elite.
Oh, yeah.
You can't move.
Again, what's wrong with that? No, that's what Elon says. Why would he says I don't like public transit. You know, why would you want to be in a train with
really,
a lot of other people? Yes.
Because it's really efficient at moving large numbers of people from point A to point B,
which the boring company is not. Because
if you can only
you can have a boring
how much
bus.
You're going to have to charge for one car
because you dug a hole in LA.
Because you dug a hole for that distance. And at the end of the day, it's actually not going to solve the transport problem for the society as a whole because it's only going to move a few hundred people at a time at most. Like at any given interval, you're only going to have a few hundred cars inside the tunnel. You know,
so I do have to admire him, though, because he is launching his Roadster.
The date has been set.
February 6th.
Of course, that may well slip, and it is only 4 years late, so, you know, it's...
This is the largest commercial rocket ever made. It's as big as, the Apollo rockets, the Falcon Heavy.
Slightly smaller, slightly thinner, and about the same height,
And in order to test a rocket, you have to give it a payload. He says, well, we could give it a bunch of cement bricks, but why not?
Why aren't they just putting speculative payloads in there? I can't understand why you would put you're talking about shifting 40-ton, I think it was a 40-ton payload or something like that?
Yeah.
Well, that's not the Roadster.
So why not just take a bunch of charity projects up there or educational projects for people who aren't able to afford...
They're not putting them in orbit, or are they?
He's flinging it on a supposed... I mean, it will go around Mars at one point, but in probably about 1,000 years down the line. I think with regards... It would be great if people could hitch a free ride up there, but I think what they're worried about is the insurance, because if it does go kaboom, those will still be counted on their actuarial record as spaceships destroyed
one of these
during
weird
a launch.
So even though you're sending up payloads that have zero value...
But this whole
thing—are you being facetious? No.
The insurance market is enormously important to SpaceX because they've got so little actuarial tables to work from. They're getting killed on the premiums.
Yes.
So they want every safe launch they can possibly get. And Elon himself has said it's pucker factor with this one. It could well either blow up on the launch pad or blow up. Hopefully,
because it's so big.
Yeah, and complicated. There's 27 rocket motors in this thing,
and they all have to fire at
milliseconds of
it. Well, even tighter, I would imagine. If you're putting
that
much thrust,
slightly off.
Yeah,
you go. There goes a Tesla down to Florida.
It's very difficult to have a minor fault in rocketry. It's either whole thing.
Yeah. It either works or no. That's a well taken point. Well,
but it is just the video of that thing for doing the test firing this week was
I'm trying to. Run the video. I got so aggressively punishing auto start video on web pages. I think I can't run any video at all.
That happened to
fine if you're going
to
be like that. Then,
it's just sitting there spinning. But you can see it on Twitter on the @SpaceX Twitter feed.
Yeah, they got it in the YouTube channel, the SpaceX YouTube channel as well. It's a pretty amazing sight. So,
yes, Elon's nuts. But he's a good kind of nuts.
It's not a crazy kind of nuts like Zuckerberg or
Kim Jong Il or something.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say healthy nuts.
No, I mean the boring company thing really is nuts, but a lot of his stuff, I mean, PayPal worked out, SpaceX is working out, Tesla's working out. You can deal with a certain amount of nuts.
Tesla's got some pretty big problems, like its ability. Yeah. It's running into literally the inability to scale up production.
Here you go. We're going to bring the thunder. This is the Falcon Heavy This is a static test, so the engines are firing, but they're not going anywhere.
They're testing that it's actually...
Oh, my God.
Oh, it gets better. Check this out.
Oh, my God. Now, I'm told if you're there, and by the way, there means within a mile.
Yes.
No closer. The Earth moves.
So this we've just done there is validated that it's actually a rocket and not a bomb. Like, not a firecracker. That's what static firing is.
It's a big step forward. Yeah.
Will it go boom or will it go whoosh?
You know? And Berman,
how do they hold it in place, though? It's a lot of lift. It's not a lot of thrust.
Yeah. Well, it's because when you actually fire it off, for the first couple of seconds, the inertia of the thing is so heavy because it's fully fueled
so
up
slowly
that it'll just like you can move it within parameters.
Mm. Okay.
So they just did a limited burst. And that sound you heard, that's even with them piling water into the base to try and deaden the sound as well. So that's where you get a lot of the steam from.
February 6th, everybody.
I'm so tempted to fly out.
Did you also admire your taxes in action there?
We paid for this. I thought it was private.
The rocket's private, but all of the supporting infrastructure isn't.
Oh, that's Cape Canaveral.
Well, it's leased by SpaceX from
NASA.
They're
paying rent.
Yeah, but it's all NASA. It was all built with taxes.
Oh, hey. Does anybody mind paying taxes for NASA? Hell no. Well, I want to pay more. Please take my money.
Elon makes a big point about how much support he gets from NASA to make these rockets work.
And NASA saved the company basically with the space.
It wouldn't be possible if he had to build the actual launch pads and get the permissions in the space, like finding that much real estate. Yeah. And then, did you see there was a YouTube video that NASA published of testing the fire suppression system? They pump out 450,000 gallons of water per second. It's the most amazing. It's on YouTube.
So basically, all the good the Tesla company is doing to save the environment is being completely offset by the SpaceX.
Yeah. I've often thought that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of a zero sum.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know why I led with that, except that I saw this flamethrower all week and I thought, is this a joke? Is this serious?
Yeah. No, they'd start. It's a genius bit of marketing. And I can't see any reason why anybody would want one. There is that kind of, there's that thing, it's the kind of thing it would be great to have for like a few minutes and play around with, but if you just had it around the house, you'd find yourself, there's a raccoon under the house, I'll just go and burn it out. The next thing you know, I'm living in a tent, you know, it's just like.
So this is the water flow test.
Holy
where
cow.
They shoot out just this vast.
Is that also on the
just
SpaceX YouTube?
Just do a NASA water flow test on YouTube, bring that up. It's pretty amazing to watch.
Wow. We all love space. Geeks love space stuff, right?
I watch every launch. I actually put it in my calendar and I'll stop what I'm doing to watch.
You guys are a little younger than me, but I grew up watching Walter Cronkite.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. What is that about? Why are they pouring so much water?
So they're testing that's a fire suppression.
Oh, that's the fire suppression.
Yeah.
So really, you think water is the best thing? What about some fancy chemical? Foam.
There's also sound suppression on the rocket engines, but
yes.
Wow. Here's the sound. You want to see the sound suppression system? It's curiously similar. This is the Ares rocket, which
480,000 gallons of water at high speeds from a holding tank.
500,000 gallons, just.
It makes my jacuzzi look like a complete piece of.
I guess this is not nearly as spectacular. but it's like, here it comes. There's like a little, so this is like, they spray that during the launch to deaden the sound?
It deadens the sound and it keeps everything relatively cool.
Is this something new that they do now?
No, they did this with Saturn.
Really?
Rockets.
I don't even remember this.
Yeah. It would probably make the pad reusable.
Wasn't paying enough attention to Walter Cronkite.
Otherwise, you'd end up melting down the pad.
And now they're spraying the water suppression. Keep the engines cool.
Yep.
The best part is...
Isn't it funny? You set a rocket on fire and then you pour water onto it.
Yeah.
Crazy notion.
Science. Who knew? I do think that Tesla is having some troubles. We're seeing the Tesla cars really not being manufactured in the volumes that...
You know, as soon as somebody says that, then the Tesla army comes in and says, oh, you're just shorting the stock. You're a naysayer. Yep. They're doing fine. They're able to – it's hard to say. I mean, the burn rate is very high. Well, they're spending a lot of money.
I don't understand why they laid off so many of the manufacturing people off earlier in the month.
That's not
that
a good
doesn't
sign.
That doesn't make an awful lot of sense. But you're right. But it's all about whether or not they can ramp up the Model 3 production.
They need to be producing like 1,000 vehicles a day.
Mm. At some point,
and that's
I'm sure
really
they will.
Only something that Ford and you know the big motor companies that we have now. Let's assume for a minute that the big companies are actually smart enough to change their ways.
Mm. But generally, big assumption. Yeah,
big assumption. But you know, let's go with that. It is also pretty amazing to be able to produce 1,000 cars a day. You need an awful lot of metal. You need an awful lot of parts. They all need to be in the right place. And, you know, you just need vast amounts of capital to set up that production capability, that production engine. And Tesla doesn't really have a lot of money, seriously. Mm. Like, he doesn't have a lot of spare cash lying around to build more factories and buy new robots and all that sort of stuff. So I think it's reasonable to ask, can he actually scale up the production of the Teslas and his Roadsters and the threes that he's talking about? And he may actually stumble on the most prosaic and tedious of things, production, manufacturing.
Yeah, well, they've got this factory out in China now, which they're starting to ramp up. But even so, there's a, you know, there are, is it 400,000 people who are waiting for their Model S, and sooner or later they're going to ask for their money back.
I'm waiting. I'll wait as long as you need it. Yeah. Mm. I got $1,000 on Elon Musk. I'm pushing it all in. I'm all in. Is this a concern for investors only, frankly, right? I mean,
well, yeah, because the Tesla is valued, what, 50 times, 75 times? Yeah. Mm. And it's fundamentally no earnings. It's burning cash at a phenomenal rate.
If you bought Tesla stock, you probably kind of knew you were
going to take a haircut.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, they're going to acknowledge the fact that ramping up production's harder than expected.
It's tough.
Well, how many times have you heard that in the last...
And yet, I still feel like a lot of the naysayers come from Detroit and come from people shorting the stock. Admittedly, there are a lot of cheerleaders like me who, I mean, I put my money where my mouth is. I bought a Model X. I have a down payment on a Model 3. Who want Elon to succeed because he's doing something really important. And look, if it weren't for Tesla, would we be seeing every manufacturer
there's
making
the
electric
rub,
vehicles?
And this is where the real value has been.
Or is that governmental push?
No, we will. Virtually all car manufacturers have announced that within 5 years they'll be producing only electric cars.
Right.
Yeah.
So now, that's not entirely Tesla, but that's...
It'll still be petrol cars. All new models. Well, let's be clear here. All new models will be electric. You'll still be able to buy petrol or diesel cars in 5 years' time, probably just petrol. Because the existing models have a sales
cycle.
Can
I buy gas cars?
Well, that's an interesting discussion.
In some countries, you won't be able to.
You won't be able to.
Norway says by 2020,
Holland,
the
Netherlands as well.
The interesting part is that if you look at the distribution mechanism around petrol and oil, like these flammable materials, it's actually incredibly difficult. The whole market for petrol stations collapses if petrol consumption reduces by just a third.
Well, and also gasoline is very toxic. And in fact, there are places in Petaluma that will never be built because they were gas stations and the gas tanks down there cannot be economically, the soil can't be remediated economically. They will never be used. That's not a good. Meanwhile, we have already a pretty good electric distribution system, admittedly not designed for fueling cars, but the electricity's everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I think you're going to see what we're seeing now is an emergence of a point mode of electricity where you're most likely the electricity production is going to become from solar cells or wind localized. So imagine a roadhouse on the side of the road, and it's going to have like 50 to 100 charging points in it.
The superchargers, I think, are already solar powered.
Many of them are, because why would you want to run the extra electricity there? Precisely. Why not just put a bunch of batteries and a bunch of solar panels out there, and then you can just generate the electricity locally?
That's how I charge my car at home. We have solar panels, and it's not direct because it's
moving. And I mean, initially, you've got the supercharger stations where you can drive in, spend 20 minutes, have a light meal while your car's charging or something like that, and we're back to a very traditional model. But when you look at how this is going to disrupt so many industries in terms of making that shift, and also what we're going to do with the infrastructure that's left at the end of the day, because as you rightly point out, getting rid of an old petrol station is incredibly expensive because you've got to haul the tanks out of the ground, get all the gubbins out from underneath them. It's going to be a really interesting shift. Throw autonomous cars into the mix, and
I just like the idea of actually generating your own electricity and then putting it in cars.
Yeah, it feels good.
Like local production.
It feels good.
Yeah.
Because you just feel like you're doing something positive.
And on the motorway, like those big motorway fuel petrol stations, and you know, top they're they got the space to lob up as many solar panels as you want, and you know, why not?
Meanwhile, our United States has just put a 30% tariff on solar panels from China.
I know,
which may cost as many as 40,000 jobs in the U.S. because it turns out there's a market for solar panels in the United States,
and a lot of people installing them.
Yeah. Do we not make solar panels here?
We used to, and then the Chinese and Germans flooded the market out with cheap imports.
So there maybe is a reason to be protectionist.
Yes and no, but the problem is that the U.S. doesn't have the capacity to actually
deal with this.
So what they've done...
It's too late. They should have done it while Solyndra, like those, before the solar companies went under.
Indeed. Mm. I mean, that would have been the logical thing to do, but you know what the U.S. government's like. It's, you know, penny smart and dollar stupid.
Mm. Right.
But, yeah, I mean, there isn't enough... This is why they built, you know, various protection. It wasn't... You know, the tax thing is coming in, but only after you bought a certain number of solar panels. So they're trying to roll it back a little bit that way. But yes, a profoundly stupid move in a year of profoundly stupid moves on behalf of the U.S. government.
So we saw 3 or 4 years ago, we saw a couple of the big solar manufacturing plants go under. They were originally financed with government money, and then they couldn't float in the market because the Chinese had actually come out with cheap and flooded it with undercost. Yeah. And the Chinese government, it was... thought at that time that the Chinese government had priced the panels to kill the companies in the U.S. So that they could then ship
the panels here. Well, they succeeded because 80% of the panels in the United States last year installed in the United States were...
Now, you could also make the case that you actually don't want to make them here because it's an incredibly toxic process. It's incredibly dirty and incredibly toxic and requires vast amounts of energy that you may or may not have.
It's complicated. If you wanted to preserve the solar panel industry in the United States, you probably should have acted sooner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, basically.
Yeah. Two or three.
You're closing the
door. Or invested more money into basic research to sort of technologically leapfrog the Chinese. But you know, China isn't dumb. They know exactly where the market's going, and the market's going solar and renewables.
I think it would be smarter to look at storage systems. How are you going to store the excess energy? And it would be...
Well, Australia's got a great example of that with the Tesla battery that's... Mm-hmm. You know,
Powerwall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I've been trying to buy a Powerwall.
No, they've built a huge, I think it's a 100 gigawatt battery farm out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, that's in Adelaide. Yeah.
Yeah, to balance out the power. Because if a coal station goes down, then large numbers of people are suffering brownouts.
This is the problem with solar power is it's tied to the sun. It's tied to sunny weather.
And well, so what
need to smooth out demand.
So what Tesla did was said, we will build you this battery plant to smooth out demand, and if we don't do it in 100 days, you get it free. And they came in just for it. But this thing has made $1 million in the last month by allowing energy trading by the company that holds it.
So I think if you're going to evaluate Tesla and Elon's strategy, you have to evaluate as a whole, not just the Model 3, but there is a much larger, and he's been very forthright about this, much larger plan afoot.
Well,
he could trip himself up by a failure.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much resources can you know? Right.
I think people invest in him feel like they're investing in a larger plan rather than just the Model 3 production.
Theory, for the amount of money that's being thrown around, it has to be some sort of wisdom or something.
It's like Uber.
Yeah.
Right? You're not investing in a ride-sharing, a ride-hailing company.
No.
That isn't – there's no way Uber makes its money back. It's losing faster than Tesla.
Yes.
It's losing more money than any company's lost in the history of losing money.
Well, they're fundamentally, at this point in time, they're still subsidizing the taxi rides.
By 40%.
Yes.
Yeah.
So at some point, prices will increase substantially and demand will drop and cars
Is this crazy time that the investors are willing to support companies with kind of long-term, almost crazy goals because there's such a big win at the end of that rainbow?
Well, the Uber win is ultimately what we were talking about in the car on the way up, which is...
Autonomous vehicles.
Autonomous vehicles.
The end of car ownership entirely.
Yeah, you'll have a transportation module will arrive and you'll get in and it will take you where you wish to go. Nobody will own cars.
It's a little bullish on the future. You see here that the new CEO, Dara Khosrowshahi, is saying, and I'm so sorry, Dara, but that's the best I can do, is saying that we'll have self-driving cars in service in a year and a half. That seems... Is it level 4, level 5 autonomy? I mean, is there a steering wheel?
Even if they did get to that point, they wouldn't be allowed to run them on the roads because it's not the technology that's holding this back now. It's the
psychology.
Legal framework, the insurance. And you know,
although you'd think insurance would be all down for this.
Well, yeah, but on the other hand, they still haven't sold...
These cars are safer than human
cars.
Oh,
they are safer, but then you've got the liability when they crash. Because these cars will crash.
Yeah.
It's just...
You'll have debts.
No, actually, in the UK, the insurance companies are now offering a 20% discount if you drive a Tesla Model 3.
Hallelujah.
And you activate the auto driving feature on the highway.
A year and a half ago,
when cars are that much more reliable.
A year and a half ago, when I got my Model X, the insurance company said, "Oh, you're not going to use the autopilot, are you?"
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and I am actually, I have a huge deductible.
Yeah.
Because it's quite the opposite.
Yes.
They didn't trust it. Now they're coming around. I hope so.
They're coming around. They're actually saying that.
It's true, though. Actuarial tables should tell you.
Well, the National Traffic Safety Board and their report into that guy that got decapped in the Tesla by when it missed the trailer said that once
it didn't miss the trailer. That was the problem. It actually hit the trailer.
Well, yeah. Okay. The cameras missed the God. And I thought
the car
didn't
see the trailer. The car hit the trailer, and the guy lost his head.
But they were saying where anti-collision is turned on, that cuts accidents by 40%.
Yeah, that's actually the key. It's not driving down the highway with your hands off the wheel. It's the car seeing that you're going to run into a car, and it's happened to me many times now. Saying sometimes spuriously, sometimes false positives, but saying you're closing on that car really fast, and it pretensions the seatbelt, it starts the brakes, and it alerts me. And that, I am sure, has saved many a rear-end collision.
Superhuman, we call that. That's superhuman technology.
Because it's so much faster than I would be.
It just has to be better than human to be superhuman.
Yeah, right? Which is not much. It's a low bar.
No, especially when you're driving and you've had 30 years of driving a car and you're not expecting something to happen and you're tired and your tummy's, you just had dinner and you're feeling a bit sleepy.
Yeah, I mean, the case the lawyers are really looking for is when somebody was in a self-driving car, they saw there was a crash coming, and it swerved and hit somebody else. And there, where does the liability live? And they're still working out the answers. You know, it's the old, is it better to kill one person or to kill five?
Well, the question is responsibility. Simple human psychology says, if somebody drove into me and killed me, that's their fault. If it's a machine, who do I blame? And at some point, society, as we see increasing automation everywhere, what about automated trains? What about automated buses? What about... when we get to fully automated sewage systems or electricity systems, all of our electricity systems today are all manually done. There's literally operators. This is where the battery pack thing comes in, is that because the battery pack can respond in milliseconds, it actually is responding faster than the grid operators can
flip the switches.
Switches, right? Normally what would happen is there'd actually be a blackout, and if they were unlucky and weren't able to catch it in time, it would actually blow all the transformers up the line.
Right.
And then the power couldn't come down the main east-west corridor. And so what's happening now is the battery packs come up, hold the power stable enough time for the organizers to bring up more power, and then the battery pack retires.
Right.
Now, financially, that battery pack is super, super financially viable because that's peak power. So that's $10,000 a kilowatt. That's the maximum rate because that's the power at the critical time. And then the battery pack pulls back out. Now, normally what you would do is the guys in the power control fire up, they press the button for the gas turbine generators.
Right.
So they're all these spot. And there's a whole business, financial business, around building gas turbines all over the country for peak power. And they only run for about a week out of every quarter. Mm. But when they run for like $6,000 a kilowatt hour right through the peak burst when, the coal power station's blowing up or a transformer goes in a main cap. And they fire up at the peak. And that's what makes gas power quite profitable for many people. And these companies are like hedge funds just putting power stations on spec.
That's funny.
Right? So these battery packs are able to come in with power much quicker, much faster, and fill the void and then retire out of the grid when the slower acting systems come back up. So it's much more complicated. I did some computers at a power generator, a power distribution company, and learned just enough to be stupid. I feel like I can open my mouth. Don't quote me on any of that, but that's
it. It's so interesting because obviously all of these solutions are better. They're superhuman. You nailed it.
Yeah.
10% better than human is superhuman. Mm-hmm. But the psychology of it is what's really holding it back, is we don't want to try. Nowadays, I keep saying this and people say, no, it's not true. But I think it is true. I've been told it's true. When you're flying in a commercial airplane, much of the time, a human's not flying it. Sometimes even when it's landing.
First 5 and last minutes are generally when the humans have the most.
But even in landing, sometimes it will self-land just to, keep up on the. Stuff.
It is a problem because we do have a situation now where some pilots just aren't getting enough stick time. So when things go wrong,
they don't know what to do.
Well, they know what to do. They just haven't had much practice at doing it. And, it's autonomous planes make a certain amount of sense in the same way that autonomous cars do. But I think people are going to be more willing to get behind the wheel of an autonomous car that they're in rather than persuading 300 people to get into an entirely autonomous plane and hope that blue screen of death doesn't actually mean that.
You wrote an article about a motorcycle and a self-driving
vehicle. The GM lawsuit. Yes, this was...
I liked, actually, this must be you that put the comment in here about the GM lawsuit.
Oh.
That must have been your headline. Biker yes. Nerfed by Robo Chevy in San Francisco now lobs Sue Ball at GM.
Is nerf a thing in Australia as well, as in bikers get nerfed when they get knocked off by the cars?
Do you know what that means, nerfed? You can imagine, though, I bet. Somewhere. Yeah. They're going, I don't know what he's talking about.
But yeah, I think this was just an example of...
Bye, Mr. Biker Guy. Drove my Chevy to the lefty, but the Chevy was a rock. You okay, are right. Really on fire, Ian Thompson.
Wait, what can I say? I mean, I will say my editor came up with the subhead, and that was just a pure work of genius. It was just...
A motorcyclist suing GM after he was knocked off of his motorbike by a self-driving vehicle, alleging negligence, demanding damages. Photographer Oscar Nielsen said he was hit by a Chevy Bolt. It had a human driver at the wheel, but the driver was testing GM's hands-free self-driving technology.
Testing
it.
Well, I think this was very...
It moved into the... It moved into the left lane. I'm trying to imagine this, of a three-lane, one-way road. So they have these middle lanes for turning for either direction. While the photographer continued on in the center lane, it moved into the left lane. The Bolt then veered right, sideswiping Nielsen and knocking him down. This is the claim, of course, of the plaintiff. GM says you shouldn't have tried to pass the Bolt as it was changing lanes. Clearly, the car didn't see the biker; it wouldn't have gone into that lane.
Well, this is the thinking. We're quite curious about this because California is unique amongst American driving markets in that it is the only state which explicitly allows lane splitting. That's when you're on a bike and you go down the white line between the lanes rather than actually in the center of each lane. So it's actually legal over here.
It drives me nuts, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a really efficient way to get bikes through, but...
I understand that, but I'm always afraid I'm going to hit one because they're coming up and I don't see them, and maybe I just inch to the left a little bit or whatever. It just makes me very nervous.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
It should only be if the traffic is really stopped.
Yes, exactly.
The problem is, and I don't know what the law says, but people lane split even when traffic's running at full speed.
That does freak me out an awful lot, because if you're sitting in traffic and you're not moving, then you can check mirrors on a regular basis and you expect it. But if you're... Yeah. If you're bombing along at 40, sort of 50 miles an hour, and somebody's lane splitting at 60, then you're just...
What speed were these vehicles going?
But this was it. They were only going 17 miles an hour when it happened. Yeah. So what I think happened was that the software wasn't configured to deal with somebody lane splitting.
Probably not.
And just, okay, there's nobody in that lane. The fact they're on the white line, I'm just going to ignore, and then I'll cut back in.
But lawsuit aside, injuries aside, if there were any, this is what self-driving car people tell me. Every accident is a good thing because... We now know about lane splitting.
Yep.
And also, I mean, I felt a bit... we did this because it's an autonomous car, but if you look at the number of motorcycle deaths and motorcycle injuries and car injuries and the rest of it, or the number of times... You know, there was the story with the... there was an accident with a Tesla earlier at the start of this week where it had autopilot on, ran into the back of a fire truck at 65 miles an hour. Now, the driver got out and walked away. Now, that's a testament to a really well-built car. But, you know, cars have accidents all the time, and the fact they're autonomous or they're, you know, self-driving and the rest of it, we're going to, you know, we will eventually get over the point which is like, well, it's just a car accident. I mean, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
So just to come back to something you said earlier about Uber and saying that they were going to have self-driving cars on the road by
2019.
It might just be a very limited trial. We saw something come up this week where there was a sealed community that was doing self-driving cars.
There are constrained situations where a self-driving car is completely reasonable.
I imagine that Uber is out there right now trying to sign up smaller communities that would allow them on to get, so they can have a headline about, you know, our vehicles are self-driving, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Because you've got to justify a $60 billion valuation with lies and marketing.
Will we see in our lifetime the end of private car ownership? And
yes.
We will.
It'll be done by 2030.
I would say it would take slightly longer, but I think the costs of driving your own car, particularly if it's a petrol car on the road, will reduce it to, I think, you know, the standard, you know, petrol car that you and I have will be the equivalent of the classic car.
It won't be an enthusiast view. Yeah. It won't be because of cars. It'll be because there's no mechanics and there's no petrol stations. Right? If you think about your electric vehicle, it has no drivetrain, no gearbox, no differential, no motor.
There's no maintenance.
It doesn't need oil.
I bring it in every year just so they can look at it and polish it up.
Yeah. They don't even need disc brake changes like a current car does because they regenerate electricity. So very, the disc
you
brake
use
pads
brakes,
last.
Brakes very little. Yeah.
They last 3 years, right? So if you suddenly see a substantial reduction in cars, you're going to see a substantial reduction in mechanic shops that repair these things. You're going to see a corresponding – now all of a sudden, instead of there being a petrol station at the end of the street, you're going to spend 20 minutes getting to a petrol station
for
petrol. And the inconvenience of that starts to feed a negative cycle. And I think – and there's a whole bunch of other things too. The insurance is going to be – if you're self-driving a petrol-powered car, which is flammable, it's fundamentally a bomb, right? Compared to an electric car.
In a sense, though, any vehicle with enough energy to propel a several-ton mass at a speed of 60-plus miles has enough energy stored in it to be a bomb.
That's
so the
true.
Insurance. What my point is that the insurance cost of a petrol-powered vehicle is going to be substantially more than – and not just because it's actually a dangerous thing. It's a bomb. It's got, you know, a tank full of petrol. But also because manual driving is going to be so much less reliable than at least semi-autonomous autonomous.
We can rationally know that, and as I said, we still have that psychological barrier.
I think enough people like physically driving their own car.
Well, I used to ask the Ford CEO, former Ford CEO, Alan Mulally, who I knew at the time was working on self-driving cars but continually denied it, and later we found out they were, said people like to drive.
Yeah.
We don't see a market because people like to drive.
No,
former GM
But we won't get to drive
the
soon.
Former CEO of General Motors is on the record as saying that there's no chance that self-driving cars will be permitted on the road by 2030.
That's
zero chance.
The regulatory because issue is a big issue.
The regulatory, it's just
that's
unsafe.
That's the key thing going to be.
And it's not even going
also,
to be...
like jumping off of high cliffs into small... amounts of water, but that doesn't mean we let them do it. Actually, they don't really let them.
No, just going to say we do let them do it, but I mean, it's just like...
It's going to be a very interesting thing. I wanted to come back to one other point that I made a note. You talked about Powerwall and why your Powerwall hasn't come here.
Yeah, where is my Powerwall?
Well, I found out, I was listening to, I did some research with Bloomberg New Energy. There's a Bloomberg New Energy group in London. They talk about all this stuff. It turns out that all of the car makers expected the batteries to last 3 years.
Uh-oh.
And then they would pull the batteries out and they would... And the idea
that's
was...
That would be the Powerwall.
That would be the Powerwall.
Used
right?
Tesla batteries.
Yeah, they wouldn't be good enough.
I'm actually
driving.
Driving on a Powerwall right now.
Yes.
It just has four wheels.
Exactly. And some people even use their Teslas.
You can
put them
with
through
an inverter. You can...
Yeah.
And an interchange system and so forth.
You
but
can do
turns
the same
out,
with the Prius with a mod kit.
I'm going to actually do that because I don't think I'm going to see my Powerwall. And now you're telling me why.
Yeah.
They don't have the batteries.
The batteries... are lasting 10 years. They're now predicted to last 10 years. So the original idea, remember when we talked about electric cars and it was always like, oh, we're going to have to be replacing the batteries. It's going to be like your remote control. You know, it's going to be terrible. Nobody wants to replace their batteries every 3 years. Turns out the batteries that they were building 3 years ago are going to last 10 years.
Mm.
Is it analogous to wear leveling on an SSD that we're just learning how to charge them in a way that they don't get damaged as fast?
I think they predicted that in the wild, the lithium...
Because
the chambers would degrade.
Yeah.
And, you know, the charge and discharge and, you know, who knows, maybe people just aren't, maybe the algorithms that they used to charge them from 3 years ago to where they are now are much more sophisticated. I mean, look at your iPhone or your Android. It's so much more sophisticated about power management.
Right.
Look at the recent...
We're getting better at it. Yeah.
You know, the iPhone can decide whether to go for speed or length. You know,
when
you recharge a battery, you can have a fast charge and then, you know, now you have the fast charge until you hit 80%, then the slow charge and so on and so forth.
You see why I want a Powerwall. I have 30 solar cells on my roof. If it could charge the Powerwall on the wall on the way to... The electric
There's
company.
Just, no,
I would have to worry about outages.
The economics about Renault had the same thing. So you'll find Renault with their they have an electric car, and the others all had Powerwall solutions.
Yes.
They were bringing they had marketing.
No.
They'd been out there. Hey,
you're not getting the.
There's
recycled,
no batteries coming back out of the cars
batteries.
As they had.
Also, they're trying to cycle. They're trying to cycle up the Nevada Gigafactory as fast as they can.
There's,
but that's
another place
into,
where they're having difficulty.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
I want to talk a little bit about, and we're going to take a break. But I want to talk about when we come back. One of the businesses Uber wants to get into and probably will get into, it already is in a way, is Uber Eats, is the idea of delivering. You've got all these drivers and all these cars out there. Maybe they're autonomous. Maybe they don't have drivers, but they're going around. There are other businesses. There's some very interesting businesses. Steve Yeagy, who was an engineer at Google, recently quit after 13 years at Google, said there's not enough innovation going on at Google. Went to a Southeast Asian company called Grab, which is a food delivery company. He says, but this is so much more than that. And it's the same kind of promise that Uber has, that this The new economy is fascinating, and it is. Mm. It does feel like it's coming at us like a fast moving train. 2030, I can handle it, but there's other changes coming. We'll talk about that, and also, if you're a convenience store clerk, why you may want to start preparing your resume. First, a word from stamps.com. Talk about disintermediation. Why go to the post office? I love the post office. I like hanging out there. But frankly, if you're a business and you do mailing, you should be printing your own U.S. postage from your computer, not a postage meter, and your printer, no special ink. You could be doing everything you do at the post office right at your desk. Buy and print postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail. The mail carrier still comes and picks it up. In fact, they even, you know, you can even say, I request a pickup. You also save money because you get discounts you can't get at the post office. You never have to worry about having the right postage. I still get packages from people with extra stamps on them. You know, it's just, I don't want to send a postage due. Or worse, I do occasionally get a postage due package from companies, and I think that's a bad impression, really. To get stamps.com. You can create your account in minutes. There's no equipment to lease. There's no long-term commitment. We actually have a great package for you. If you go to stamps.com, click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, we will get you a digital scale, USB scale, so you always have exactly the right way. You always have exactly the right postage, which you print yourself. You can actually print it on a label for a package. You could print it on an envelope if you're sending bills or brochures. It'll help you decide the right class of mail. And look what else you get, $55 in free postage. You can use that over the first few months of your account. You get a supplies package worth $5. That's to cover the postage and handling of $5 for the scale. And you get a four-week trial. This is a $110 offer, free. All you got to do is go to stamps.com. Stop going to the post office. Do it all at your desk. Makes you more efficient, makes you more professional looking. You know what? You could still go and visit the post office every once in a while. I have a post office box. I go, I say hi to everybody.
Oh, bless.
Like them. I like them. So I go and I say hi, but I don't buy stamps. Stamps.com. Click the microphone. Use the offer code TWIT for that $110 bonus offer. Did you guys read Steve Yeagy's Medium post? Maybe I am.
Yeah.
So here's a guy who's been at Google.
I can't help feeling he had a point, you know?
Yeah.
This was an epic piece of bridge burning, considering what he tried to do the first, how he nearly got fired the first time. But
Wait a minute. I didn't hear that part. How did he almost get fired the first time?
I thought
I recognized the name.
Yeah, when he first joined, he posted something online about how all these people were idiots and, you know, the bureaucracy and that sort of thing. And those guys, are they going to fire him? Are they not going to fire him? And they didn't fire him. And then now he actually has left.
And still called them. Yeah.
He's just basically napalmed the bridge behind him.
No, he was, you know, I think now I understand, because there's a paragraph where he says, I love people at Google. They're super smart and world-class and always humble.
Mm.
But the company strategy is a mess. So now I understand why he wrote that paragraph.
Yeah.
This was, he had learned his lesson. He says, when a company is as dramatically successful as Google has been, the organization, and I think this is absolutely true of any organization, can become afflicted with a sense of invincibility and almost manifest destiny, which leads to tragic outcomes. Complacency, not invented here syndrome, loss of touch with customers, poor strategic decision making.
It's the curse of the industry.
It is. Googlers know this is happening. They're as frustrated by it as you are, but their leadership is failing them. And so,
I mean, we've seen Microsoft do this. We've seen Apple do this. We're seeing Amazon doing it right now.
Every big company's like this. They're all stupid.
Well,
it doesn't matter which big company, whether it's General Motors or...
It's a business cycle too, right? I mean, you have a great success. Look at Apple with the iPhone.
Yep.
That, in a way, clobbers any hope of future innovation.
Because you can't, because you're extracting revenue from the success you've got.
You're extracting every penny out of this thing.
That's right.
That's the rub, and that's what kills you in the end.
But the point is that any big company is a tragedy of the commons.
Hmm.
It automatically becomes boring and tedious, because the only way to keep 1,000 programmers in line is to put 250 executives in charge, making sure that they're all pointed in the same direction instead of running off on harebrained ideas.
Yeah.
I mean, all I read there is somebody whining about big companies being boring.
Well,
Yahoo.
Yeah,
right?
To me, that yes, and it was all obvious. Although it's interesting to hear about Google, because for one thing, Google has always tried not to do this. They've been very aware of this.
I've
not like they didn't
do
know
the same
this.
Thing with Facebook. I've seen the same thing with Yahoo employees. Oh, the company's really boring.
That must
we
have been
can't
a while
get
ago,
anything
right?
done. I've worked in enterprise IT for 30 years. How do I survive 25 years in the dumbest area of IT ever? And that's I could have written that for you any time over the last 20 years. You know.
But you run your own business.
Now.
Which is a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Now
see,
I'm unhappy about
thought,
myself.
You know? The thing I thought was interesting was actually not the indictment of Google, although that's the headline, but why he went to this Southeast Asian company called Grab, which is basically the Uber, perhaps, of Southeast Asia. It's a ride hailing. But he says it's so much more than that.
Blah, 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 blah. I work for a fun startup.
Well, okay, I could throw this out. I just think that what he's talking about, the future is interesting. For instance, he says once you have the Grab app on your phone, because Southeast Asia is basically a cash economy, there's a huge opportunity, as happened in Africa with M-Pesa, to become a payments platform.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And I think this is the way new companies kind of think of the synergies of what they're doing and what Uber is thinking about food delivery, package delivery. That's what the opportunity, of course, is in Southeast Asia. He said restaurants are probably dead. A lot of food trucks were the next thing, and then they're starting to die because people are actually building commercial kitchens that don't have customers.
They're building them in containers. In parking lots.
And a bike drives up or a car drives up, picks up the food and drives it to you.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a restaurant with no tables.
Yes.
But with no atmosphere, with no...
Well, your home is the atmosphere.
And there's no central... If you go to a restaurant...
There's no experience.
Well, if you go to a restaurant that is run by a central chef who is known and they...
It's a performance. You know, it's an art.
It's that, but... Honestly,
Ruth Reichel, the famous New York Times food critic for years, said great restaurants are theater more than anything else.
Yeah. Mm. Which, of course,
it's an experience. You walk in the door, there's a performance.
Yeah, McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
It's a theater.
Yeah. It's theater. It's, there's tables.
It's more
and
SpongeBob
chairs,
than Hamlet.
Certainly what Taco Bell are calling food, I would call theater. No, it's just.
So, this story about setting up containers, I read a story this week about a family who had. Been set up a food truck and worked out that the food truck game was over and they'd moved to a container kitchen, which is an industrial building in some nearby area to a city, and they were now just doing via delivery services.
Yeah.
And that was the new game for them. But I do, I think that people who want to opine about restaurants being an experience that everybody wants to have the experience.
Well, it's a very expensive experience.
Yeah. It's like saying everybody should drive a Ferrari because it's an experience, right? Or,
what makes me sad is that people aren't cooking, though.
Well, no, this is it.
Not only replaces restaurants, replaces cooking.
I know.
At home, right?
Why haven't we got any decent automation in the home? Why is home automation such an abysmal failure? Why do we not have, a fridge and an extra and a machine that just cooks decent food out of raw ingredients.
Yeah. Tea, because it's incredibly difficult to do.
But it's what a market. There's some vast, every house.
Let's start a company. You get $1 billion.
Jazeera. We'll get a Jazeera going.
We'll start and say we're making a juicer, but really.
Yeah. First step on a road to automation.
CES was full of this rubbish this year. You had the robot clothes folder.
Which emerges every January. It's never
stupid.
Made it to the market. Still not available?
Oh no, it's coming next year. They've jacked up the price, and to use it, you've got to peg the clothes in a specific way onto the robot that takes just as much time as folding up your own.
Is this the Foldy Mate?
Yeah.
The work out of laundry
this
folding.
This is the Juicero of clothes, it's just...
When you see the Rube Goldberg device... Oh, I love the music. And now this lovely young couple are about to disrobe. No, wait a minute. That's the future. Tea parties with the children. When are we going to get to the Foldy Mate? I want to see the folding.
What's the point of this ad?
So she has a lot of... clothes.
It reminds me of Homer Simpson's advert. It was Senor Plow.
Oh, here it is. Here it is. Look, it looks like a Xerox machine in your living room.
So you don't have to.
Yeah. He puts one shirt in after you don't see him clipping
it. You spend more time preparing the shirt for the Foldy Mate than actually folding the shirt.
So you don't have to.
I guess one day I'll grow up and just stop hanging them on the floor.
Yeah.
Take the work. So that's the automated
That's good enough to wear. Yeah.
Right. Circa 2018.
I mean, that's solving a problem that's not a problem.
Yeah,
right? At the end of the day, you can just chuck your clothes on the floor and you're done. Mm. Having a machine to fold your clothes isn't going to move the needle. But I think, you know, why is it that we haven't seen more automation about home-prepared food?
No, that's so an interesting...
I mean, technically...
No, it might be very difficult.
You could argue that we have in terms of microwave meals.
Yeah.
You know,
and there are companies...
It's a pre-processed thing that's loaded full of salt and fat and
sugar. What was the name of that company that Megan reviewed? They sell an oven... It's really kind of silly, and they sell
The June.
No, I have a June. That's silly, but it's not. It's silly in a different way. This oven.
It's silly oven in a better way or a worse way.
It's kind of a steam table / oven / microwave. It has a barcode reader, and they send you food, which you scan and then put in, and the oven knows whether to steam or bake or fry, and does it, and then out comes a meal. Actually, the meals weren't bad.
I guess yeah, ultimately, I mean, look at how hard getting light bulbs into people's homes has been. Look at Hue, and you know the
are they not doing well? Well, feels like they're doing well.
Yeah, but it seems to me like this is something that
I just bought a
dozen
Hues.
Yeah, well, I have a dozen as well.
I don't know what I was thinking.
Nah.
I still can't convince my wife and daughters to use them.
Well,
you know.
So my wife says, well, you're putting all these, I put them in my office. Mm-hmm. You're putting all these in your office. You know, I can now say, turn wine closet light on dim, turn desk lights on bright. Yep. And then when I leave, I say, and I do this with the Echo, turn off lights in den and the lights go off.
Oh, I have a motion sensor for
that.
And
she goes, okay, well, I could do that, but I like talking to my, but she says, put these in the bedroom. That's what I said. I'll use the finger. No. She said, put these in the bedroom. And there is a flaw to the Hue, which you may not have discovered yet. But if the power goes out.
Yes.
And if it's, and this happened in the bedroom, and the power comes back, the lights come on full.
You can set the default state.
They've changed it.
Yes, there's a new setting.
Okay.
Yes.
Because that was the reason I don't have them in the bedroom.
So what I actually have is an IFTTT script. It goes through and triggers them all off at a certain time and certain preconditions.
Yeah. When the
but
sun goes
now
down,
you can have a situation that if the power goes out, what's the state that it comes back in?
Is that you have to use if this and that, or do you?
No. It's in the Hue app. Yeah, deep down in the bowels.
I think I'm
going
to buy another dozen.
Yeah. I bought, so I have a whole bunch of them. I actually have them plugged in to my home studio. I've got some lights like this.
Yeah. Have you done the entertainment thing yet where it matches the TV show?
Not yet, because I don't ever watch TV, so.
That's just what I love about this show. I feel like a Luddite right now. You know, I do not have speakers in my home listening to what's being said. I do not have an IoT device to turn on the heating.
Well, I don't actually have any of those.
No, I use my hand. It's very reliable.
Here's something
power.
I want you to go and research for me. There was 39 million Alexas sold over Christmas. I wonder how many of them are actually still being used by the end of January.
Yeah.
Oh, all of them. But
no.
Most of them will be used as a timer.
Yeah. Or as a speaker or something like that.
Oh, there's another video I can't play. Gosh darn it. What did I do to my Chrome? First, I couldn't get things to stop playing. Now I can't get things to stop playing.
Is it a start to play? It's not a click to play plugin?
No, I don't know what I did. Maybe it is. Let's look.
Sometimes you have to.
Yeah.
They go like that when they're waiting to play.
Yeah.
You got to click the play down the bottom left there.
But this thing?
Yep. Stop it and then play it. Nope. You've really screwed it.
I'm telling you. But look, the CNET autoplay is working fine.
Yeah. It's odd how that works, isn't it?
That's genius. See, anti ad tech is better than you.
Yeah.
And you want this machine to cook my dinner?
No.
Fold my clothes?
I would never put Windows to cook
my
dinner.
Draw my bath? No, that's really...
Honestly, we're always talking about, we need more STEM education, research, and that's just... I don't know what it was like when you were going to school, but we actually had home economics where they taught you how to cook.
Yep.
They
don't
teach that anymore.
And it saves you a fortune. It's much better for you. And then all the automated food preparation systems in the world do not taste as good as my mum's shepherd's pie. And it's just, it's one of those things.
Yeah.
I just wondered. I just thought home automation just seems like a desert, like a technology desert.
That all of these, what was it, 29 million, 39 million?
There was 39 million Alexa things.
And Google sold
a lot.
A smaller number, but tens of millions.
About 10, 15.
So maybe 50 million devices. Look at all these devices out there. Mm. And you think that they are just going to end up unused in a month or two?
I think there's a very small number of people.
So you don't use yours?
No.
Are we talking them like
you don't
the, like,
use? I don't even have them.
No, I don't have an Alexa. I use Siri on my iPad.
So you think they'll be like the waffle maker machines that just stick up in the? You buy, you get it. So oh, is that great? I'll stick it.
And eventually, it's like the bloomin' thing talks when you don't want it to, so you just crush it underfoot. You know, like damn thing.
Oh,
you know,
accidentally.
I have to. So
we went on a couple. We took a weekend off. Went to a hotel and we had some people stay in the house. And I came back. All the echoes were set into the red mute mode. Everyone they'd gone through the house disabling. I have cameras in every room. I have echoes in every room. I have Google Assistants in most rooms.
Okay.
But I like it.
The thing is, don't you
want to be able to go into your den and say, Alexa, don't say it out loud, but Echo, turn on the den lights.
No, I have a motion sensor that turns them on.
I've got a
finger. Why do I need a speaker to do that?
Just roll it around the dimmer switch like that, and it works every time.
I just have a motion sensor, and the motion sensor is programmed.
You pretend to be technology lovers. You're lovers.
No, I am a technology lover.
The thing about Alexa is that
Echo, so we don't trigger people's.
The thing about the Amazon Echo is that it's fairly retarded in terms of its voice capability. It doesn't actually recognize.
It's better than Siri, Siri user.
Well, Siri is now the special cousin of assistants.
If you develop a Siri, an Alexa skill, you actually have to set up all of this. Like, you have to say every single word pattern that it's going to recognize.
Mm.
So you're actually...
Only as the programmer, but once you, as a user, you turn on the skill.
Which means you get this inconsistent execution, right? So you have to learn...
The syntax is very complex.
You have to learn how to speak the language that the Echo is programmed. So that's not... Siri, at least, is a somewhat more intelligent... In the sense that it attempts to interpret what you... Now, I suspect that in the long term, Siri will eclipse because it's trying to be intelligent
and
smart.
Not even a chance. Google's going to win the game here, I think, easily.
I don't think people want to do business with Google.
Maybe not.
Same as Facebook. We're talking about the collapse of Facebook here. You know,
do you feel, though, that Apple... I mean, I understand psychologically people trust Apple, but do you think it's actually more trustworthy?
I think conceptually, yes, because the financial incentives are aligned. So in the sense
you're conceptually trustworthy.
Well, no, but traditionally Apple hasn't made a lot of money out of selling your data. That hasn't been their business model. They instead send you overly expensive hardware that's balked so it doesn't work with other pieces of kit. Whereas Google and Facebook and the others are
companies.
Monetizing
you.
Yeah,
they're ad companies.
And I think Greg's absolutely right on this. There is going to be a real backlash against firms who are selling your data back to you as opposed to firms which just say, here's a phone. It's outrageously expensive, but you might want to buy it.
Did you guys... pre-order an Apple HomePod available on Friday?
I ordered it and then I canceled it.
Why?
Because it only works with Apple Music.
Yeah.
So it's pointless.
You can port through Spotify if you're willing to jump through any number
AirPlay
of... You
can use AirPlay to Spotify. Yep.
You can use AirPlay, which then just destroys the utility of the device.
Yeah, you want to be able to talk to the thing and say, play my song. So I bought a HomePod and joined Apple Music, just like Apple wanted me to.
Yeah. Good boy, Leo. Good boy.
Now you tell me Apple's not predatory.
but at least you know what you're getting. You know?
I signed up for the trial for iTunes Music and got to the end of it and went like, this is just so meh.
Yeah.
And signed up for Spotify and I'm very pleased.
Spotify, yeah.
Yep. And particularly the family plan because I've got teenage daughters who, you know, and listening to them listen to ads on Spotify was driving me nuts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I felt like I was a really good dad at that point.
The teenagers.
Right? Spotify with no ads is definitely a teenage thing. Right?
Spotify? You Spotify all Spotify? No? Apple Music?
Yeah.
What? Anybody use Google Music? One. It's the one guy.
Really?
One guy.
Does Google have music? Yeah. I didn't even know.
You didn't know?
No.
Oh, Google's got a great solution.
I don't want anything to do with Google.
Pandora? Anybody use Pandora? Nobody in the younger generation.
Pandora doesn't exist
in
Australia.
Oh, it doesn't exist in Australia.
Well, I used to use it, and then I used to work. I used to live next door to somebody from Pandora, and he was a complete. Well, I can't say that word.
That's a personal reason for not using it. You didn't like your neighbor.
Yeah,
I like Pandora, but I find once you have one of these services, they basically overlap. Every service is roughly the same with slight differences. I like Spotify's playlists. I like its social.
I like the fact that from the Spotify app, I can play directly to my Sonos speakers.
Yes.
Mm. So I've got the...
Well, and the HomePod says they will support Spotify. I believe Apple will support
eventually,
Spotify.
Eventually, in a very roundabout way.
But you like Siri so much,
I think
I
Apple
thought you
will
might
only
like...
support Spotify later when I haven't bought this HomePod
now. Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I think things I like about Spotify is I can point it to my Sonos speakers, and then I can be playing it on my laptop or my iMac and then pick up my iPhone and there's Spotify knowing what the track list is and showing that it's streaming to the Sonos. So that handoff feature is really quite nice.
I mean, the biggest, coming back to what you were saying earlier, when iTunes came out, it was the pup's packet of media of music players. It was really, really good.
Yeah.
And then with each integration afterwards, they've just killed it.
A dog's breakfast. The pup's packet, is that like... It's the opposite of a dog's breakfast.
No, the packet's a different area of a dog, which you probably shouldn't go into.
He's referring to the byproducts of a puppy.
Or the instigator.
Yes.
So first comes the dog's breakfast, then comes the pup's packet.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Got
it.
Something along those lines, yes.
They're related by time and distance.
Yes, well, it's the natural course of things. No, I think Apple Music is...
I'm sorry, I interrupted your really thought.
No, it's just... But iTunes has got progressively worse. Spotify has got an awful lot better. And I think... People, if you're trying to launch something to go in the home and you're saying it must be all about Apple Music, they're limiting their audience. The price limits it even further. It's an astonishingly expensive piece of kit.
Yeah. I don't like the Beat service. I think it's awful. Their curation of playlists and music is... I don't know where those people keep their taste, but mostly it seems to be in their pants.
I can't agree.
So, you know, they're awful.
Like, whenever I see someone with Beats headphones, you're just like...
But if you like Apple Siri... This is the only device right now that you can use Siri.
I don't like Siri.
You don't
said,
like it.
I don't use it barely for anything, except to set a timer when I'm cooking.
Right.
Mm. But what I think, what I was trying to say is that I think long-term Siri has got a technological advantage over time because it is truly intelligent.
And Apple is not predatory.
Yes. And we've seen various demonstrations of the Echo. When you say Amazon, buy me a shoehorn, it ships you the most expensive shoehorn, not the one you probably wanted, right?
Well, that's your fault for just not specifying. I haven't had that problem.
No, I was talking to somebody about it this week. He got shipped the one that was this long.
Well,
and made out of carbon fiber and signed by Michael Schumacher.
And it was 2.5 times the price of the cheapest shoehorn.
Yeah. Usually the way it works, you say, Echo, buy me a shoehorn, and it says, I found this for $49.99. Would you like it? And then if he says yes, then it says, give me your PIN. So the guy was a little more complicit than he's admitting to.
That one-click patent is really paying off big time, right?
So yeah.
I guess I generally don't trust. I believe that all Amazon, Google, and Facebook are all predatory businesses.
I feel like Apple probably is too.
Think they are, but
with different goals.
Yeah, and I'm being exploited in terms of paying a premium for a product.
Yeah.
And I'm much happier with that deal.
It's clear to me that Apple HomePod plus Apple Music is a great example, is interested in lock-in. Is not particularly interested in providing great services, but very much like to charge you more for the bad services.
They've rushed it out as well.
They've rushed it out.
Yeah.
And they're only supporting AirPlay 1.
It doesn't do
stereo. It
doesn't do multi-room music.
They're
doesn't
all
do AirPlay
waiting
1.
For AirPlay 2 protocol. Yeah. So the AirPlay 1 protocol, if you've ever gotten into the mechanics of it, is really not a very good outcome. And AirPlay 2 probably...
What is the difference between AirPlay 1 and 2, technically?
I'm not 100% sure I can explain it, so I'm not going to. Yeah. I'll say I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah. There's a lot more features.
AirPlay
more
1 was basically DLNA with some Apple.
Mm. And it does multicast over the... It relies on multicast for discovery.
2 does.
No, 1
does.
1
okay.
does. That's how it discovers all the devices in the system and stuff.
Okay.
But I think that AirPlay 2... AirPlay 1 was a hardware-centric, so you had to have a specific chip.
Right.
Or you had to have a specific... It had to be embedded in chip. And you had to have a license from Apple to put it in hardware. AirPlay 2 is going to be software. And it's going to allow you to put this in a much greater number of devices. So AirPlay 2 is not hardware-centric. It's software.
That's exciting. So
and
that's
Siri then will be able to be put into other people's devices.
Right.
And you won't have the annoyances of having to be certified by Apple, et cetera, et cetera.
We don't have a HomePod, but we have an amazing simulation. One of our engineers, Burke, loves making true-to-scale, not to weight, but to size models of devices we can't get. And this is his HomePod. That gives you it's a fairly big device.
Smaller than my Sonos 3.
It's smaller than bigger than the Sonos 1.
Smaller than my Sonos 5.
Yeah, but it's much smaller than the Play 5.
Much more expensive.
$350.
Yeah.
In fact, Sonos
that's
Smart.
That's quite a bit cheaper than a
Play 5. Oh, really?
Well, the Play 5, but not a Play 1. Sonos is offering 2-for-1 Play 1s for $350. Hoping to get some of this market away from Apple.
And they've got their new smart speaker now that's got Alexa support today and will have Siri support.
That's the home. That's the Play 1.
Yeah, that's the Play 1. Play 1.
Or Sonos 1, not the Play 1. Sonos 1, I think it's called.
That's right.
All right, let's take a break. I'll tell you why I do. One of my really absolute main reason for having a lot of Echo devices in the house is because it's from Amazon, it can play my audiobooks. And all I have to do is say, and I do like this, Echo, read to me. and it will pick up where I left off on my audiobook. And to me, that's great. By the way, I should say all of these voice devices are good for podcasting.
Yes.
In every respect.
Every
because
respect.
You can finally ask for a show by name, and it'll play it for you. And I always said podcasting isn't going anywhere until it's as easy to do as listen to the radio. Now it's actually easier. So I feel good about that. Let's talk about Audible, our sponsor for the hour. We love Audible, as you know. I've been an Audible subscriber for 18 years now, since 2000. I have more than 500 books in my library. If you've never listened to audiobooks, maybe you're a little nervous about the idea of listening instead of reading. But I have to say, I am a huge fan. The readers at Audible are uniformly fantastic. Sometimes they're the author, but much more often they're professionals. For instance, the new Andy Weir book is narrated by Rosario Dawson because it has a female protagonist. He's the guy who wrote The Martian. She does an amazing job. The book comes to life. Now, there are some authors like Neil Gaiman that you absolutely want to narrate his own books, his Norse mythologies. He has such a great kind of posh accent. He brings it to life. So I really love it. Audible books, thousands, I think it's hundreds of thousands of titles across all type of literature, fiction, nonfiction, periodicals. I try to mix it. Let me show you my current Audible library, and you'll see there's a kind of a, by the way, I see I have some credits. Ooh, that's nice. I'm looking forward to that. I try to mix it up. So I'll listen to fiction, then nonfiction, then fiction, and then nonfiction. I'm listening to a book by Russell Shorto, which is the history of the American Revolution in five of its actors. Six of its actors. So a slave, George Washington, a Brit. It's really into one of the British generals. Really interesting. Lisa listens
one
to
day
this.
We'll get this.
You
country.
Are a badass at making money. By the way, this is one of the nice features of Audible. Now it supports family.
Okay.
So we have. I just listened to Fire and Fury. The Artemis, of course, fantastic.
Oh, really? How was that?
It's good fun.
Yeah,
it's good fun. I don't want to get too political on the show, but
he's burnt a lot of sources with that book, and I'm curious to know. If
Michael
it's worth
Wolff.
It.
It's pretty clear when you listen to it. His chief source was Steve Bannon.
Yeah,
and one of the things you get immediately from Steve Bannon, he's one of those guys who is verbally like very adept, very adroit, very fast, very funny.
Yeah.
You know that guy.
Oh, yeah.
He's like Truman Capote or something. He zing people right and left. And it was clear that for whatever reason, he didn't hold back with Michael Wolff. And so it is just full of the most scurrilous gossip.
But also, once you actually write
Steve Bannon, who's like, I got to tell somebody.
I think it's not necessarily scurrilous gossip because it seems to be real.
Yeah.
Well, there's no evidence that this is actually gossip.
Nobody's come forward and said, yeah, I didn't say that.
No.
But Melania's not going to come through and say, yes, I was in tears and not of joy at the election win. And that's
no, you'll never hear Melania say that.
But
it sure is fun to read. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. Jean Le Carré, I'm on a Jean Le Carré kick right
he's
now.
He's very good.
Legacy of Spies, his new novel.
Mm.
Fabulous. Fabulous. As you see, a lot of history. Americana, a 400-year-old history of capitalism. It's Bushrit Esvasan. It's really good. Let me give you some sci-fi, because I know everybody's interested in sci-fi. Ursula K. Le Guin passed away this week.
I know.
88 years old.
It's been...
I am going back
which
to
Which of hers
reread.
Would you read? Lathe of Heaven?
I'd still go back to the Ursi trilogy.
Yeah,
I find,
exactly.
Like, I read the Ursi trilogy as a teenager, and had a massive impact on the way I...
I'm still bitter that Raymond Feist managed to nick so much of that for the Magician series, but
Oh, you guys are much more literate about this than
But
I
yeah,
am.
What with her and Marky Smith, it was a very bad week for creatives.
The Wizard of Ursi, the Ursi cycle, the three books of the Ursi cycle.
So start with The Wizard, which is book one.
Yep.
One of the things that Audible's done so well is bring back sci-fi. So in this case, recorded books go out and get her publisher to go along, but many of these classics, the Heinlein and the Asimovs, were never recorded because, in the 50s and 60s, there's no market for audiobooks. So they've gone back with their Frontier series and brought back some of the best sci-fi.
Yeah, they're the only people that carry Ian Banks as well, which is a real pet.
Love Ian Banks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
he
only
does his own stuff, I'm sure.
He used to, but I don't know who they've got doing it now, but... I mean, this Audible gets my wife through a commute. You know, she couldn't handle an hour and a half in the car every day without a decent audiobook.
We got a deal for you. If you go to audible.com, and you'll be signing up for the Gold Plus One plan at audible.com/twit2. I'm sorry, let me get that right. audible.com/twit2. You get two free books and a 30-day free trial. So you start off, and I think this is really made for the person who, perhaps like you, has yet to sign up for Audible because you're thinking, I don't know, am I going to like audiobooks? So all I can say is try it. It saved my life. I've been an audiobook listener since Audible started, I think, for 18 years. And I've read hundreds of books that way. It's the only way now that I really get to read because, there's all this dead time in the car or at, doing the laundry or walking the dog or whatever where you just,
The shower.
I don't listen in the shower.
Yet. No, but we actually found that a substantial proportion of our audience actually has a Bluetooth speaker stuck in the bath.
Oh,
and they listen while they're in the shower in the morning.
We have a waterproof Bluetooth speaker.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Well, just not packing it in, Leo.
You clearly need to do more.
Now my wife's big on the bath, so it's just like this is great, and I don't have to worry about the electrics being rotted, and I don't have to take the phone in. And if we've just had a row, then I can just hack into the Bluetooth signal and start playing.
Audible.com/twit2. You start off with two free books, and then you get a book credit per month, blessed with all subscriptions.
Thank you.
Your choice of the Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal. Or the New York Times, audible.com/twit2. The only problem with Audible is once we get started talking about books, kind of easily derails the show. I just can't. Do any of you guys, you're young students, do you ever listen to audiobooks? No, you do. But most of you just reading. Well, your eyes are old and tired.
Yes.
I actually encourage my kids. One of the research they've done is that kids, even young kids, who listen to books, kids' books, and Audible has a lot of them, will read more. It just gets you into books.
No, I think it's great.
You have to train your mind to visualize the content of a book.
There is a skill. Yeah.
There is a skill to reading
but
and
once
then
you
visualizing.
Do it,
because you have to learn to... I learned to speed read at university.
Are you visualizing when you speed read? No.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, I've been speed reading for 30 years.
How fast?
600 words a minute sort of thing, 400 to 600 words. Depends on what I'm reading. Is it
as a full and rich experience as if you read at my speed?
I will change up the speed according to...
240 words per second?
I will change up the speed according to what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So...
Well, I certainly skim a lot.
If I'm skimming a lot of...
The kind of stuff we needed to study for the show.
I've got an RSS feed that looks like a train smash.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that I speed read at 600 words a minute. There was an app on the App Store that used to do that. You'd set the speed and then just...
From our friend Clayton Morris.
Yeah.
And it was designed to teach you...
To speed read.
Oh, to speed read. Okay.
Yeah. Let me find the name of
that. There's a couple of different ways to do it. So you need to try more than one. One way is to read word at a time, but the best way is to read a paragraph, like a group of words at a time. And so instead of read quick.
And I think I'm pretty sure it's still available. Read quick 3.0. And yeah, you get to set the speed and train yourself. But the weird way it works is you only see one word at a time.
Yeah, I didn't like the one word at a time because I trained to read a phrase at a time.
Right. I thought like Evelyn Wood and these old speed reading
so
classes.
So when you start off at school, they teach you to read one word, then one word, then one word.
Yeah, that's,
so that's
slow.
Because so what you want to do is read phrase. And you get if you really practice it, you can get to line.
Yeah, that's what I want to do.
So I can get through a trashy novel in like 6 hours. 300 pages of trashy novel in 6 hours.
And meanwhile, Ian is speed reading goats licking one another. What is that? What are you doing?
It's just something my wife said to me.
Am I boring you?
No. I was just thinking. I was looking around on social media.
Your wife sent you a picture of a goat licking another goat. Is that a love image?
Oh.
Or no, don't. We don't have to get into it.
No. Remember, bah means no. I was just trying to find a picture because I had put on social media a picture of myself in front of a bookcase. And somebody was just like, there's no way you've read all those books. And it's just like, are you kidding? There's four more of them around there.
Have you read them all?
We did before internet.
Yeah, we had to read the books.
Yeah.
I have a lot of books I haven't read. I had a bad habit of buying, even I do this with audiobooks, of buying them, saying I'm going to read them.
I've weaned myself off that now with the library. I'll just order them from the library. I've got a definite deadline I have to read them by. Because if I borrow a book from somebody, chances are they're not going to get it back from 6 months. You know, thieves steal your possessions, friends steal your books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right now I'm listening to about 5 different books at once. That's another bad habit. I really have to
keep. Yeah, I've started doing that with podcasts, listening to multiple podcasts at the same time.
Not at the same time.
No, not at the same time.
That would be a skill.
That would be a real
speed
skill.
Speed podcasting.
Yeah, podfasting.
That would be a skill. Don't do that.
I do podfasting. I do listen at like 1.7 times for some of them.
Are you going to buy? It's apparently for sale, although my invitation hasn't come. The new Google $250 AI-powered Clips camera.
Oh. It was so funny at the hardware launch when they announced this, because they were just like, it's not creepy, honest. It's really not creepy.
It's creepy.
You know, it's AI. It's so you just creepy. Leave it on. It takes photos of you when you like it, but it's definitely not creepy.
It's creepy.
And it's just like, you know.
So you put it, so the way you train it is you get close to your subject, and then you put it somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and it now knows, oh, this is who you're focusing on. And it will then, take pictures randomly?
Pretty much.
Figure out which ones are the best and then upload them to your Google Photos?
Yeah, it's the idea. I mean, the way they pitched it at the launch was you would stick it in a bookshelf. You know, and it'll take
That's not creepy at all.
And then just check through the...
just leave it there. See what happens.
See who's, you know...
Put it in the bathroom.
Yeah,
okay.
You know, just lead around, see what was taken. Maybe it's just like the family lolling around the living room. Maybe it's your teenage son watching the beach volleyball, you know. It's just... there's all kinds of things that it could pick up.
What fun we could have.
Yep.
They claim its AI is trained by professional photographers.
Oh, no, sorry. That's, can't say that on air.
I don't even know how you would train them. How you would say, no, that's good. No, that's not good.
You've got to take your AI out for a walk every morning and jump it over.
No. Bad AI. No, bad.
It's one of those things I think probably sounded good in a planning meeting. And yeah, okay, we can knock it out really cheap as well. Just stick a couple of chips in there.
$250 isn't that cheap.
No, they can. To actually build it, though, is fairly cheap.
Oh, we can build it for $10. We can charge $200.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Because you've got to have all the, there's a SIM in there. There has to be a SIM to do the upload. Or a Wi-Fi system?
No, it pairs to your phone. It doesn't have its own connectivity. So it merely has Bluetooth.
That is a $10 item then. They're trying to charge for cloud services then.
Well,
I mean, it's effectively a lifetime subscription to Photos or something?
It's the way it's gone. I mean, Nexus used to be a really good brand of phone because it was cheap, it was pretty powerful, and it did everything you wanted to. Then they all went to Pixel. Oh, we'll charge Apple prices, but it's not as good as an Apple. Oh, hush you, you know.
Yeah.
It's just...
So 16 gigs of storage, it does not go to the cloud directly. If you want it to go to the cloud, you have to copy it to your phone.
Mm-hmm. No removable media, of course.
Now, notice I'm still on the wait list, but people apparently were getting their invitations. So I'm buy it because I buy everything. And
well, you know, it's kind of comes with the job. But
so I look at this and I'm just thinking of the security impact. So I'm thinking, did you hear about the exercise company Strava?
And Yes.
Unbelievable. You told me about this on the way up, and I will leave it to you.
I'll post a Twitter.
This is actually a lot of athletes use, runners particularly. Yep. It keeps track of your runs.
A lot of annoying people on Facebook because I went on a 3-mile run with my Strava. And
Tobias Schneider obviously went out and started looking at this excellent activity, and now he's tracking down military bases. And he's showing, you can see the running tracks where these people obviously spend time on fitness.
So is it because it's more used by the military?
Well,
military people tend to do a lot of jogging and they like to keep results. So, if you actually look at it, then when you told me this, I couldn't believe it. I checked it out. You know,
but what have you learned? I mean, all you're learning is where the jogging tracks are.
Well, you've got an airport that's down as abandoned in Mogadishu.
Oh.
And then all of a sudden, if you look on the thing, it's bright red lines going all the way around.
Someone's exercising around the perimeter, just about where you would put a fence.
Is this Strava's fault or is it the user's fault? Let's face it.
It's just standard intelligence.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you're selling one of those bands to consumers, they're not going to know to turn it off.
Yeah, but if you're in the military in a formerly closed Air Force base that is currently been recommissioned, you shouldn't be wearing that band.
No. But I mean, Russian soldiers got caught like that in Ukraine.
Ukrainian artillery, they had that app that came out that the Russian intelligence released.
You know, there was the ISIS guy who got snuffed out because he left geolocation on his Instagram feed.
Yeah.
You know, it happens, you know. Yep. The Israelis found this out early.
I always poo-poo these privacy concerns, but here I think you have a legitimate reason for concern. If you're a freedom fighter, you might not want to be using.
Well, the Israelis found this out very early once when mobile phones became more popular because they found that all their servicemen were taking mobile phones with them so they could speak to their friends or family when they're on maneuvers, and they were just like, "This has to stop right now. You don't take your own personal bit of kit on an army operation because they're trackable."
Right. Mm. Here's the Pentagon. This is kind of interesting. The heat map shows very little activity inside. But everybody's leaving the Pentagon. There's lots of movement outside.
So it must be a shielded building.
Ah.
right?
Yeah.
So that it would
you
be an
are
RF shield
smart.
Recording.
Yeah. You are smart. They can't get any signal out.
Actually, it's just obvious, I thought, but...
Okay. How could you miss that?
Smart, but not as gracious as you could be, mate. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
See, obviously, I'm not very smart. Yeah. I'm never coming back here again.
So the military does caution soldiers. Yes. You probably shouldn't be using your four-square check-ins while you're on mission.
Yep. Yeah, when you're heading over to the mess, you shouldn't be checking in to be the mayor of the mess.
I'm the mayor. I'm the mayor of the base.
Whatever it is that four-square does.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, I look at all of these things and I'm thinking just how quickly you could exploit these for nefarious purposes. And, you know, we've already seen a number of criminal activities related to fitness trackers. You know, he went upstairs and that way they concluded that the murder case.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what the outcome, whether the court accepted that.
No, the court did accept it. It's just basically he said that he...
Was this the hot tub murder or was this something else?
No. This was a guy, I think they said that someone was accused of killing their partner and they said they came home and their partner was dead on the floor and their Fitbit showed that, in fact, 20 minutes after he got home, then she was moving up and down the staircase and then was found dead on the floor. And it was just like, did you drag the corpse up and down the staircase or did you, and forget to tell us about it?
We've got some categories of people who shouldn't be using trackers. Murderers.
Yep.
Members of the armed forces. Yeah.
I imagine if you were
podcast host,
if you are doing any sort of criminal activity, take off the Fitbit and the Apple Watch.
I just got 100,000 paces today.
Running from the police.
We had some fun this week. This was a good week on Twitter, and we've decided that the best way to communicate that to you is to prepare a short film for your enjoyment. Please watch.
Previously on Twit.
You're looking more like a lumberjack every time I see you. Can I just... Oh, I love that. That is so nice. I wish I could have a beard like that.
You could. You could have the
is
beard.
That what
I'll
happened?
Take the hair.
All the hair went into your face.
This Week in Google.
The Wall Street Journal had a story about how the internet was filling up because a lot of Indians are sending millions of texts that just say good morning. They just got phones and so the first thing they want to do is send a cheery greeting to everyone they know. And I just think it's funny that people are saying good morning.
Tech News Weekly.
This week, Amazon opened its cashierless store to the public. Walk into the Amazon Go, scan your phone, grab your stuff, and run as fast as you can.
After picking up and dropping things, I kept doing all this random crap to try to trip it up. Didn't work. So then when I left, I just said, I don't want that yogurt. And I tapped refund on the yogurt, and I said I didn't like it, and it gave me my money back. And then I went back for a second trip and just handed the yogurt to somebody.
Look, I'm a journalist, all right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's about ethics and yogurt journalism.
Twit. Tell your boss it's job related.
That's a good slogan.
I can't wait for one to use this Amazon Go store. I just love the idea of just walking in and walking out. I think they should be on every corner. I mean, I feel bad for 7-Eleven clerks.
Oh, that I can live without, but things like, I'm sure.
You don't want that? Like, it wouldn't even be, like, you wouldn't even have to have a storefront. You could just have a closet in the office or whatever. I mean, you could, wouldn't you like that? A store you just go into, you take what you want, and eventually you won't have to scan your phone. It'll just say, well, I know it's Leo.
I actually want my shops to actually have goods on the shelf. I mean, every time I go to the supermarket in the UK, they can't stack the shelves fast enough. They're half empty.
See, there's a job opportunity. People can get jobs.
They're all on the checkouts. I guess. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Too many people in the checkouts, not enough people.
Yeah, you see,
that may be a symptom of a problem in the UK economy.
I think for stuff that you're buying in bulk, like, toilet paper and the rest of it, fine. But for fruits and veggies, I actually want to see them before I put them in the basket.
You can still do that. No, you go in, you squeeze it, you choose it, you take it with you. You're doing everything. The only thing you're not doing is going through a checkout process. You're just walking out the door. See, you bring your little earthy...
And everything's RFID tagged. And
it's all cameras, too. I mean, they have 40 or 50 cameras.
See, there's an interesting thing here in terms of data points about what Amazon knows about you. What happens if you pick up, I don't know, something,
put it
back down? Does that signal? No. But they've got the data to say that you were interested in this product enough to pick it up and look at it.
You're going to start getting coupons.
Yeah.
What could possibly be wrong with that?
All right. Well,
next time I'll buy that Sunny Delight.
And next time you're on the Amazon website, they start retargeting you with ads around that product.
Why would that bother you? Wouldn't you want ads for things you wanted rather than ads you had no interest in? Things you had no interest in? I never understood why people don't like ad targeting. Not that we do it.
I mean, it's beyond creepy. This is one of these superhuman things again, where, you know, the fact that I can go...
No, it's all calling because you're anthropomorphizing it. There's nothing creepy about it. You showed an interest in something, so we're going to show you.
So I bought an Apple HomePod. I put it in the shopping basket, and I signaled that I had an intent to want this thing.
Right.
Mm. And then all of a sudden, as I move around the internet, I get peppered with ads for Apple HomePods.
It already happens. If you go to Apple and retargeting. And you'll get it. In fact, Apple, after a few days, might even send you a coupon, say, we'll give you 10% off that HomePod you didn't buy.
Yep. Now,
what's wrong with that?
There's a whole bunch of negative things. Let's say maybe you've got a fetish for diapers, or say something that shouldn't necessarily come out in public, some sort of personal hygiene issue.
You it's know? Not a human. It's just a machine. It doesn't judge.
No, but...
So Leo likes diapers. What the hell's wrong with that? Throw in a little baby powder. Sweeten the pot, so to speak. So you guys went to the Amazon Go store.
Oh, really? How
did
was
you
it?
Go in and buy something and come out? Yeah. What was that like?
Fantastic.
Yeah, right? Would you like one of those in your neck of the woods? Sure you would.
Yeah.
I want the money to be able to go there. Really.
Now, were any of you considering a career as a shop clerk? No, of course not. Of course not. You go to Canberra Grammar School.
Yeah, they want to go and work for Amazon.
Yeah, they're going to be working at Amazon. Actually, they're going to be designing that bot.
I hope you found Amazon. Don't work for it.
Did you try to shoplift anything? Yeah. You did. You're very honest. And what happened?
Well, they charged it.
They charged you. So you couldn't.
No.
You tried to walk out the door. Now, did you have to scan your phone going in? How did that work?
So you did. You scan your phone going in.
Yeah.
And then you look around and it has cameras. And most of the products have like a little special sort of barcode on them.
Does it have a price on it? I mean, do you know what you're going to pay for it?
It's just like a normal shop.
Just like a normal shop. Okay.
And then, so you walk in, you scan your phone.
Yeah.
And then you just walk out.
Did they have Marmite or Vegemite?
I
doubt it.
See it.
Wow, that's really... By the way, thank you for the Vegemite. We've been... Because I have a guy from the UK and a guy from Australia here, although you live in the UK now.
I do now, yeah.
And you live in the US now.
Yeah.
So I'm totally confused. But nominally, you would be a Marmite fan, Mystery and Thompson.
I was born and raised on the stuff.
And nominally, you would be a Vegemite fan.
I am a Vegemite kid, born and raised.
Born and raised.
Yep.
And I, having never tried either, find them disgusting.
Burn the heretic. We can both agree on that one.
No, you know? Obviously, the superior, obviously, this consumption of... Yeast beverages to go on your carbohydrates. Toast is the best. Only way to make it is actually, hot toast with butter.
You know what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's actually delicious.
Yeah. It has its charms.
Yeah. I really like both of them.
Just so very high in salt. It's not.
It is salty.
It's very salty.
It's high sodium.
So you can't have a lot.
My wife, God love her, she tried Marmite twice and then she's just
American.
Like, you know what? I've tried it twice. I know I don't like it. So just get that stuff
away
from
me. You know what's fascinating? Our show today brought to you by Marmite. No. I would love.
I think it's
the first
there's
podcast.
There's a whole market for that.
I would love to be the first podcast to get. Hey, it'll be Marmite or Vegemite. I'm not particular.
I'm going to contact Procter and Gamble on Monday and.
No, Procter and Gamble doesn't. You know, Mondelez for a while owned Vegemite, I think, but they sold it to an Australian consortium, as it should be.
Mm. But yeah, they've all been acquired by various brands.
Now, can you use Vegemite in the same way as Marmite to do things like Vegemite roast potatoes? Or, you've just got this faraway look in your eye.
For those of you who have no idea, this is a spread made out of the byproduct of yeast of brewing beer. It's the yeast byproduct. It's not even fresh. It says yeast extract from yeast grown on barley and wheat.
Mm-hmm.
That's a euphemism.
Can't be any worse than things like kombucha or...
Yeah. No, certainly no. It's not fermented.
Well, that Juicero idiot who was trying to do the raw water.
His new thing is raw
thing.
Water.
No. I know. Can you see? That's just like... You remember cholera epidemics and why we don't have them anymore?
Well,
you know?
Because you all got immunized against cholera by drinking bad water.
It's just so like...
So California.
Silicon Valley's just insane.
Oh, it's why I love it. It's a fomenting... It's as if you had a vat of Marmite just bubbling over.
It's if we took all of the genetic defects of all over the world and just put them in one place and just be like, you know.
Our show today brought to you by WordPress. If you are making a blog, a website, if you're a business and you don't have a website, you need to go to WordPress. WordPress.com. 29% of the whole web runs on the WordPress content management system. I have for years, practically since WordPress started. But it was only recently I went to WordPress.com, and I have to say I love it. They handle the installation. They handle the hosting. They handle the updates, the security patches. So you can just focus on the thing you care about, putting great content on the internet. And because WordPress.com is a community, you get more traffic, more people sharing your stuff. They have built-in social sharing automatically. So your fans or your customers can share your site on their Twitter feed, their Facebook feed. Built-in search engine optimization makes it easier for you to find. They handle the technical details. You just make a great website. You don't need an expert. You don't need an experience. You can do it yourself. In fact, go right now to WordPress.com/twit, and they'll guide you through the entire process. If you do have questions, a great customer support team, WordPress experts who are eager to help you get the most from your site, and they're there 24 hours a day, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. They're even there right now on weekends, too. Plans start at just $4 a month. I have a business plan. I love it. I can even bring my own plugins and templates. It's really worth it. WordPress.com/twit. Create your website. Find the plan that's right for you and get 15% off at Word. Yes, on your new site for 15% off. WordPress.com/twit. Find out why 29% of the internet runs on WordPress.
I had a couple of attempts at blogging, and then my one that finally stuck back in January 2008 was I literally went to WordPress.com and started.
So much easier.
Yeah, it was.
I was one of those guys, probably like you. I thought, yeah. I can host this.
Yeah, I started.
I'll run it on my server.
Yeah, I'm going to, you know.
I spent so much time. All I did was update it. And
less time writing the blog than you actually keeping it up.
Yeah, I never posted. But it's a good learning experience. It's good to run your own servers.
It definitely was. But the real success was getting that first year under the belt of actually posting content on the internet was done. And then I was able to move from that to
a
self-hosted site.
Yeah.
And then build a full business around that.
Nice.
Mm.
Thank you for the plug, and thank you, WordPress.
I want to thank WordPress, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. I always feel that way. Yeah, I love those guys. This is sad. There was a $20 million Lunar X Prize for the first privately financed venture to make it to the moon. Nobody did it. None of the...
It spurred an awful lot of
There are still five remaining entrants, but none of them are in a position to launch by March, and that's what they would need.
It's getting the launch window, but honestly, I don't understand why Google didn't just... It's 20 million.
Give it to the closest, right?
That's Sergey's, you know, the change down the back of his sofa. 20 million? Oh,
I know.
Damn, I knew I'd left that somewhere, but, you know, it's...
So Space IL, Moon Express, Synergy Moon... Team Mindus and Hakuto each have contracts to launch their spacecraft, but they just didn't get it done in time.
Harder than it looks. Which
Nevertheless, this is impressive as hell. You got five commercial entities.
Which makes Tesla just reminds you how amazing SpaceX is.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that
they're doing it.
They're doing it long before these people have been at it roughly for the same amount of time and still haven't got as far.
Yeah.
So. Partly it's to do with the money and the glamour that Elon Musk brings to the game.
True, but you can't get around the fact he's actually landing rockets on a regular basis and sending them back up again.
That is an amazing thing to watch.
Wow, no one's...
That is amazing.
Very much so.
Apple now has 27 self-driving test cars. What is it?
They're going to just carry on throwing money at this for a little while until
they
can just kill it. You know?
They get the money. These are all registered with California's Department of Motor Vehicles. They're all Lexus RX 450H SUVs. Those are popular because they're big enough you could put all of that liner on the roof. Look at that. Look at that roof mount.
I've got to love California DMV because they now do a regular updated report on crash reports from autonomous cars.
Good.
Makes doing the job so much simpler. You know?
That's where you find all these motorcyclists and others.
Well, that and, you know, generally the minute the lawsuit comes in, then we get spammed out with, have you just seen I'm suing these people? Maybe you'd like to write about
it. So we've heard that Apple's given up on its self-driving ambitions, but this doesn't imply that.
I think they're winding it down. You know,
it's become clear that
the car manufacturers are going to do it themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're entering the game at about the same level that people like Apple are already at. So Google,
there's Uber, no point. What is Waymo not a competitor? Google's?
Yeah. But I mean,
I think Waymo's,
you would say General Motors has an advantage.
Yeah, but I think Google's planning to build the operating system and then sell it to the manufacturers.
Yes.
And the manufacturers are saying, yeah, well, you know.
We could just build our own.
Yeah, we've seen how well the PC hardware business did with Bill Gates, so I think we'll maybe just develop our own.
So I think it's going to be interesting to see this play out. I think we're going to see the traditional car manufacturers have a go mm-hmm. at this, and some of them will get it right and some of them will fail. So it'll be, you know, and then the ones that fail will turn to Google or Apple and relicense their technology to survive yeah. before they die. And so it's going to be a fight for whose operating system is going to be the one that runs across cars. The question is this a market where it's only one winner? So, you know, that where are the network effects here that mean there's only one winner? Or is it literally a market where BMW or Daimler, you know...
Yeah, one of the big high-end brands says... We're specially integrated with Apple, therefore you should buy us.
Indeed. Or is it because they'll develop their own, which is just as good as everybody else's? It's close enough, so we'll just run that because we developed it in-house.
Mm.
And what's the cost of developing and maintaining that software? Or is it better that that effort, that research and software development effort, be shared resources between the car yeah. makers? So I don't think there's a consensus here about what that business model looks like going forward. So we'll see a plethora of choices remain until there's some sort of, you know, guidance as to what the future model will be.
Yeah.
Also, like Apple and Google aren't going to make cars.
No.
So the car makers themselves are in a position to control what the outcome looks like. So Apple or Google or whoever else is going to produce a self-driving car operating system needs to be better than what the car makers can make.
Yeah.
So,
you know, it's interesting because this might be somewhere for BlackBerry to play. They own QNX, which is a real-time operating system. Was it a
good old BlackBerry?
I know, but who thought? But John Chen was spoke at CES and talked about this operating system. Many car manufacturers are using it. I don't know.
John
if
Chen is Marissa Meyer. He's there basically to get the best.
He's there to shut it down.
The best price for the assets that he can, and then just
QNX is an obsolete idea.
Yeah,
is it really?
Just... Yeah, pretty much. A real-time operating system was something that we needed 20 years ago. So the idea is that you can...
So Jarvis, this artificial intelligence that they want to put in their self-driving car software, that's a non-starter.
You don't think
that's a business?
Compared to the amount of money other people are putting into this and the amount of lead time they've got against BlackBerry.
I thought there was a second act in BlackBerry's future.
It's possible. So QNX is effectively Windows. What Windows is to the PC,
really?
QNX is.
I thought it was a real-time... okay. It's not in any way comparable to Windows in the sense...
Not at all, but...
Technically.
You still need apps to run above.
Yeah. It's right? a platform.
So what you're attempting to say is that QNX has a unique value as a real-time operating system
Apparently
inside
not.
A car. Well, why not just use Linux?
Right.
Why would
Tesla's
I go and pay...
use Linux.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can actually... There are real-time versions of Linux if you're into that, but it's equally just much easier to get a bigger CPU and clock it so fast that you actually don't need a real-time operating system.
Ah.
Right?
Hmm.
Even with all the LiDAR data that's pouring in
yeah,
and all of that?
Yeah. So
you just need a faster processor.
Yeah, or better software, or there are ways to work around it.
You've got a ton of electricity to play with. You've got great cooling systems to play with, so you can run these things very hot and very hard.
And if you when you have extra cycles, you can Bitcoin mine on the side.
Yeah.
All right, I was really hopeful that this was going to be the savior of BlackBerry. And
anything's possible. I mean, I think with self-driving cars, everything's still to play for.
It's all up in the air. And that's why Apple's still doing it.
Yes.
Google's got a little bit more
but it's hard
skin
to see,
in the game.
It's hard to believe that BlackBerry has a competitive advantage. I mean, what is it that's unique about it? And if they're claiming that QNX, which is literally, as a viable alternative to Linux, is a competitive edge, I find that hard to believe.
See, this is why I like having you guys on. Yeah. I learned something. Let's talk about net neutrality. The governor of Montana and now Governor Cuomo of New York have both signed executive orders. They didn't have to go through the legislature on this. Saying, if you're going to be an internet service provider in our state, you must abide by net neutrality.
Yep.
When Ajit Pai and the FCC threw out net neutrality rules a few weeks ago, one of the things they said is states can't overrule this. There can't be separate state net neutrality rules. And frankly, that kind of makes sense because you don't want to have 50 different laws governing national internet service
remarkable,
providers.
Remarkable, though, how they're anti-states' rights when it comes to something like this.
Very
pro-states' rights when guns and abortion are involved.
Right.
You know, it's strange how that mental disconnect works.
Depends which industry paid them most.
Yeah,
In any event, this is interesting. I don't know if there'll be a court challenge. I imagine that there will because, as we know, Verizon, AT&T,
they love their courtrooms.
Love that courtroom. And then... To tie this all up, AT&T put big ads in many of the nation's newspapers saying, we need net neutrality. Wait, what? Yeah.
Well, they...
That's why they spent $100 million to get rid of it.
So
what?
One of the most interesting parts about the net neutrality for me is what it means. The reason that AT&T and Verizon are so much in favor of it is not so much because they can charge more. That's certainly a part of it. But it's to do with the ad tech. So how much money they can make by selling your data about
you. And we know this. Verizon, before these rules were enforced, Verizon put that super cookie on every single Verizon owner's phone.
Yes.
The FCC was able to get them to stop, by the way.
Well,
not anymore.
So it's about a $75 billion business now, which is we're getting up to the point where the ad tech data is getting the same amount of money they make out of selling the bandwidth.
So why is AT&T, by the way, AT&T was one of the telecoms that sued the FCC and overturned their original net neutrality rules, forced them into Title II regulation. So we know that they are not really in favor of internet neutrality. Why is it they took these ads out suggesting Congress should pass an internet bill of rights in favor of net neutrality?
I think there's two reasons. First off is public relations. Because they have been, I think the telcos have been a little surprised by how much people are actually starting to take care of net neutrality now.
Mm. Yeah, they thought normal people wouldn't even know what it means.
Exactly. But the other key reason is if you actually get an internet bill of rights, who's going to write it? The lobbyists are the people with the deepest pockets. Mm. So it'll be chock full of, I mean, you were telling me about a loophole from the 1920s, which is still in operation, Greg. You know, these things are chock full of loopholes.
Let me just tell that story. So the United States is the only country in the world that didn't regard telecoms as a public utility. I think there's like one other country or two other countries where the government didn't actually install the cables in the ground and run the telephone.
Australia is a good example. The Australian government created Telstra, put in the infrastructure. They eventually kind of spun it out into private, but they started it.
And in the UK, it's BT. So British Telecom was a government department for many years. They ran all the cable and then it was privatized. But the cable itself is owned by Openreach, which is a government, semi-government. But they rent the cables to over-the-top ISPs.
See, that's the way we would like to do it in the United States, but we have an older infrastructure that was created by private industry.
So the way it worked is that back in the days of Theodore Vail, with the financial backing of JP Morgan, now this is a website called Potoroo.net. This is one of the people who designs and builds the internet. I would
read your screen, but you have some sort of weird filter on it that prevents me from seeing what you're doing.
It's in the chat room. You can see the link in the chat room.
Okay, thank you.
So the story goes is a little over a century ago, Theodore Vail, with the financial backing of JP Morgan, went after the chairman of AT&T. Now, AT&T was built off the back of buying up all of the telephone providers. This is back in the days of the operators punching the cables across.
Right.
And AT&T ended up with a monopoly of all the telephone operators.
By the way, if you don't mind, I'm going to have a little Vegemite during this story. Sit back. In fact, I invite everybody.
Wow, that's a lot of Vegemite. You put it on thick.
They told me to.
Did you
tell them about the drop bears and the hoop snakes as well?
Respect.
No, they said, no, you put it on like Nutella. Pretend it's Nutella.
Yep.
Not that thick? I should scrape it thin?
No,
Potoroo. Go back to Potoroo.
Potoroo. So
did they tell you about drop bears as well?
Come out of the trees, right?
So AT&T had a monopoly of all the telephone services. So what the government did was after there was a bunch of stuff going on, Vail had AT&T abandoned its commitment to the telegraph service and committed AT&T to the rather singular public mission for a private corporate entity to bring the wonder of the telephone to every American. Congress agreed and agreed a now unique national experiment in public-spirited monopoly. Don't you love that?
Wait a minute. Public-spirited monopoly?
That's right. Yep. AT&T was granted a monopoly to commercialize telephone to every single person.
Was the rationale, well, if we give them a monopoly, they'll invest and build this infrastructure get a payback for it?
They took away AT&T's monopoly in operating the telephone services and then gave them the ability to put the cable in the ground and exploit that for profit. So
Seems like a good deal.
So every other country in the world went for what's called a common carriage. Everybody had a shared. It was a national resource.
And like the highway system.
Yeah, and those things create money. So if you can communicate better, if you can transfer goods better, then your economy runs faster and runs hotter.
A government-run interstate highway system facilitates interstate commerce.
That's right. Yeah.
There's trucks, there's cars.
That's right. There'd be no Amazon if there wasn't roads.
Interstate commerce.
Yeah. And Amazon didn't build the roads. The government did.
Yes.
Right? So
for some reason, we decided a different plan for
AT&T had built a monopoly in some other area, and they said, well, you can't have that monopoly. We're going to break that up, but we'll give you a prize if you'll go and run.
Gift.
And so a public-spirited monopoly.
Yeah.
And so you have this unique situation. Now, AT&T then subsequently went on to be broken up into pieces. And
that's even a little thick for
I wouldn't eat that much.
Don't get me wrong. I love my Marmite.
I'm glad you're here to protect me because these kids told me to eat more.
So it's an interesting situation where in the U.S., the cables that are in the ground belong to companies who were given government support to put them there.
Mm-hmm.
So they were given a government-granted monopoly as long as they were public-spirited. Now, a lot of that – so what you're fundamentally seeing over the years is the FCC, which was a custom regulatory body that was aware of these specific issues related to this technology-rich market, which is not something the FTC or any other consumer commission is able to handle. And now that they've had all of the breaks, so there's no responsibility for them to give back.
By the way, this move was kind of duplicated when the cable companies came along and said, we want to do the same thing.
The 400 million thing.
And they gave them essentially, franchises and monopolies in individual communities for the same reason, I think.
Yeah, and they also had to do things like with cable.
It's a public-spirited monopoly.
Public-spirited. Everybody should have television. That's what makes America great.
And I think if I'm AT&T or I'm Comcast, I make the argument.
We're not getting out of here alive.
This is expensive.
Yep.
And if you want us to do this, you're going to have to give us a monopoly.
That's right.
What the question is, well, why didn't the municipal governments or the federal or the state government step in and say, well no, wait a minute, we're going to do it.
Mm.
Well, and they're trying to do it now, but then AT&T is saying, actually,
we have
laws
a government
on the books in like 20, 25 states saying you can't have a municipal broadcast.
Yes, AT&T and Verizon literally have mandated monopolies from the government. Then that's
and
what they use.
Wherever that's threatened, they've gone in. Bought legislators and overturned those.
And they're also able to take it to court and say, we have a right to this because in law, it's enshrined in law.
Yeah.
So one of the interesting things about net neutrality now is that they own the cabling infrastructure in this country and indeed have gone on to buy up the radio waves as well. So anything, any chance of getting around it by, say, 5G means that they continue to
own.
You're
still running on their backwards.
So against that situation, the FCC scaling back is actually giving them back full rights to commercialize that system with no responsibility back to society. So everything that you need to understand about net neutrality is in that frame.
It's no longer a public sphere monopoly. It's just a monopoly.
It's a monopoly. Deal with it.
Yeah. And a government-mandated monopoly.
Wow.
So it's
But there is a precedent for it because it's how it was created in the early days. I think you can make the argument, well, you guys have benefited from the monopoly. You've paid off the costs of doing this.
Yep.
It's now time for us to use eminent domain or whatever. Now, isn't AT&T, though, essentially saying, well, let's have Congress
unbundle the local loop. This is the, I mean, that could solve an awful lot of
problems. They're never going to do that, though.
Well, no.
Did you see the Burger King net neutrality?
Loved the Whopper neutrality ad.
You'll
this
have
is
to wait.
Why this is why AT&T wants to do this PR campaign, because they understand that real people, normal people, not geeks like us, are understanding net neutrality
quite how badly they're about to get shafted. Yes,
but are they? Because this is one thing that a lot of people have said, including Ajit Pai. Well, look, is there any violation of net neutrality?
Well, go to Portugal, see how they do it there. You know, they don't have net neutrality. If you can see the Portuguese price sheet, it's like you want fast access to
that was
YouTube,
a little bit. I think that's
Euros
been debunked a little bit, though. That one was more. It was a wireless carrier, and it was just saying you know you're paying for data on a wireless carrier. There's caps. We'll uncap these music services if you
get
extra. I don't think that's exactly.
I
don't
think stupid about it in the short term, but I think long term it's just the way they will start to crack down.
And it's easy
for them because they know that people are watching them. Right now.
And it's also a victimless crime. In a sense that if the carriers start charging more, then the consumer pays more, and that's it, right? It's not like and the way
we're already paying more. They very cleverly ratcheted up the costs of cable
internet. I can't believe how expensive internet is in this over here. Just outrageous.
Pretty typically $65-70 a month for high-speed internet through a cable system.
Yeah, and
a little
it's
less
not
for
the
DSL.
Same. Anyway, I think there's a couple of interesting things that I haven't seen talked about other places. One of the things is today we have a lot of cloud computing based out of the U.S. It's convenient. The prices are generally cheaper here. If the bandwidth prices rack up, it's actually going to be cheaper to take business out of the U.S. and put it offshore.
Store your data, your Dropbox data in Ireland.
Where the bandwidth is cheaper.
But because there's no competition in the market here, there's no persuasion to innovate. That's why you've still got people running DSL services and why you've still got people running very slow stuff. Because
capitalism requires
competition.
Competition, yep. frictionless decisions. It's like we were talking about healthcare in the car, right? When your leg is broken and your blood's pumping out onto the street, you don't actually sit there and go, which hospital am I going to go and visit?
Yeah.
Right?
I like the beds in that one, but the bedpans are more color coordinated.
Yeah,
here.
They've got warmed bedpans over there. Yeah. I like that one. Yeah, that's not how it works, right? So I do think that there's possibly some serious negative impacts where you start moving your operations away from the US to get away from the bandwidth, and you can certainly do that on the internet, and then still send it into the US from offshore.
But it's bizarre. I mean, when Time Warner had their latest merger talks, they're saying, well, it's not going to harm competition because we only compete in three markets. And really, the number two and the number three telco only compete in three markets. That doesn't look 3% of the market. That doesn't look a wee bit suspicious.
Yes.
You know.
It just seems to be so much leaned into what...
I would expect these companies to reflect their interests in their statements, to slant them all. Mm. The problem really has been... there's nobody looking out for the public's interest. Mm-hmm. So you're not hearing, well, maybe here you are, but in general, you're not hearing the other side of it. Yeah. So it's basically industry's point of view is accepted.
These are complex issues. It's very difficult to explain the concept of, you know, multi-rate bandwidth and traffic shaping and how this is going to impact you. The Burger King actually is a good ad.
Everybody should watch it, and it's good for Burger King, but it's also a great explanation. Mm-hmm. However, translating that into action and understanding is another matter entirely. Mm-hmm. And yes. I think the thing that this is what the telecoms are taking advantage of. This is a highly technical topic, and people really don't care that much.
I think so. And the flip side of this is that the consumer interests are no longer represented by the FCC, the Communications Commission.
They're not represented by Congress.
And no, it's the FTC.
It's now to the Federal Trade Commission. And the Federal Trade Commission has actually said, we just don't have the competency to understand this technology.
Yeah.
In fact, that's why we created the FCC.
If you want to be cynical, that's exactly why the FCC... and Congress wanted the FTC to do it because they couldn't. There would be no enforcement.
It certainly seems to be a valid argument.
Wouldn't say that's cynical. I'd say that's exactly right. Yeah. You know, it was a blatant power grab, and it was just now tough luck, consumers. You're on your own. I'm just going to sit here and wait until my term ends, and then go and be a lobbyist.
So ultimately, this is something Congress could solve.
Mm. Well, I think you're going to see
because FCC can only do what Congress mandates. One way or the other. In other words, Congress trumps the FCC, if you'll forgive them.
I think
the
FCC has a certain amount of autonomy to decide what it wants to do. It doesn't need to refer to Congress.
But ultimately, its mandate comes from Congress.
Yes,
and Congress can instruct it
to act in a certain way. Or change its mandate, obviously. Yeah.
And I think we might all agree that Title II was an imperfect solution to this. If Congress were to create a sensible net neutrality plan... But I think it would be considered radical, the plan that you're prescribing.
No, I think ultimately the only way you're going to solve this issue is that the government would have to take control of the infrastructure.
That's radical.
And then say, we own the physical infrastructure in the ground. Well, however they do that, obviously,
that would be highly controversial.
I think
it's a non-starter.
The right wing would go bananas over that, right? But then you can build a competitive capitalist market over the top where AT&T and Verizon.
All the government just says, we're going to lay down fiber backbones. They're completely open. And, you know, this is what's happened in Finland. This is what's happened in North Korea.
Why do more Korea, fiber when plenty exists underground? It just happens to be owned by Sprint, AT&T,
Well, this is the problem you run into. But,
just take it.
If the government's...
Which will never happen.
Which I was going to say.
I don't care if it's a Democrat or a Republican in office. Will never happen.
And the thing is, if I'm AT&T and Verizon I've got all that cabling in the ground, what's my incentive to light it up?
Right.
Yeah.
I have no incentive.
Scarcity is good for them.
Exactly, because they can charge more for less.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? They don't even have to go.
We know this is in society's best interest. A free and open internet promotes innovation, promotes commerce much the same way an interstate highway system promotes interstate
And if you keep
commerce.
The costs low, it allows the profits to be transferred into the companies.
You have a better educated electorate.
Yes.
You have better
now,
flow
Now, if of you are AT&T and Verizon, you're looking at Facebook and Google, these, you know, trillion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar. They feel that they should be getting money out of those businesses because they're using a product that they created,
using
but they're not monetizing. But the flip side of that is that when you get a toll road, you don't get to charge according to, you know,
how
you
much?
Don't get
You could charge by axles. You can charge by...
Yeah, you can charge by size and make the case that you're doing some sort of... Right. But you're not giving a better quality of service to one over the other, except... Yeah. So I ultimately think that at some point there has to be a community interest here, and that seems to have been abrogated by the government generally.
Completely. And it can be done because it's technical, and the community hasn't really stood
up. But the thing that really irks is... the monopoly, the mandate that is effectively a government-issued monopoly.
Back in 1907 or whatever.
Started back in, in that sort of time frame. But even today, that is a government-issued monopoly.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're screwed.
Pretty much.
Not much better in Australia, frankly.
In Australia, the cabling is owned by an entity, a Quango, semi-government entity, and then all the carriers get to rent that cable.
Yeah.
So you have multiple different service providers. Telstra's remained...
And costs are not... particularly good in Australia.
That's because
of
the size. So you've got to remember that Australia physically is the same size.
We have a similar problem. We have a very distributed population.
Yeah. Not quite the same level as just...
No, I understand.
In terms of square kilometers...
Did you guys watch the railroad train video? What was that called? Where you go on the long train ride?
Yeah.
It was just like 18 hours of just you're on the... You watched that? Was it cool?
You'd have to speed it up a bit.
Have you seen this?
Yes. I lived there.
Yeah. It's very soothing, I imagine.
It's very hot and it's unpleasant and it's like
slow TV, they're calling it.
Full of interest. I know there's lots of them though. There's the cruise liner and
there's Norwegian trains as well.
There's people who rode through the snow in Antarctica and they
So forget net neutrality, folks. We've got slow TV.
Excellent. Just smile as you go under.
Smile. Yeah, I've just found I
honestly think this is an intractable problem. I don't know how you solve this in the US.
You know, but it dates back so far and it's so entrenched. Well, like legally, the position of these telcos is a government mandated monopoly.
They're locked in.
And they've been exploiting the monopoly position in Parliament. So they're actually short circuiting your government, your democracy in a very, very real way.
Clear way. Yeah.
And I think we're stuck with it. For the billions we've given the telcos to develop fiber around the US. The U.S. government could have said, right, eminent domain, we're building a large fiber line there, offshoots there, there, and there.
It can't be done locally. It can't be done by states, though. It must be done by the federal government because it's a national network. Well, you can't just I guess you could do it in California alone.
The challenge, I think the real problem here is that if you commercialize the internet, there's going to be a haves and haves not. Mm. And we're going to see people who live in rural areas where it's not cost-effective to build out internet suffer very badly. Or if you're in a poor area, you'll have worse bandwidth. And that actually doubles down on
mobility. What's driving the spur into municipal networks because, you know, Tennessee had a lousy broadband infrastructure. And the telcos was basically, we'll get round to it. People, the classic thing was people aren't demanding it. And then when the municipal said, right, okay, we're going to build, I think it's Chattanooga, said we're going to build our own ISP and it runs cheaper, it runs faster. And the telcos are deeply worried about that. Because if people start doing their, you know, they don't have to ban the telcos or nationalize their stuff. You're just going to do it better. And once it becomes clear that local governments are doing this better than telcos that are supposed to provide the industry, then, you know, that's kind of game over for the telcos' argument that, you know, we are always the best at this.
Well, John Deere, interestingly, has popped up as an advocate for net neutrality because they need to see bandwidth on the farms so that they can automate the tractors.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, we're talking about automated
that's
crops.
That's the point, is this is good for business.
It's good for everyone.
Everybody's business except the telcos.
It's also good for consumers generally because we can start look at health,
Absolutely.
Telemedicine type.
Yeah, but the people it's bad for are the telcos.
Right.
Who have just
and
lost.
Who controls this? The telcos.
Yeah.
Who has all the money?
How could we change that?
Yeah.
How could we? What could we do? What could we? This might be one of the most important issues of our generation. What could we do to change that?
So what you could do is transfer the cable ownership into the public domain. So create a company like
Openreach.
Yeah.
No, it's still a private company, but it's owned 50% owned by the government, 50% owned by the public sort of thing, right? So the government has control, but it's sort of at arm's length. Mm. But it's held in for the people. By the people sort of thing. And then what you do is you give AT&T and Verizon the right to use that for 50 years, say. Give them a 50-year license to use it free of charge.
I'd love to see some sort of compromise work.
Yeah.
Where the telcos would need to see that the alternative is death.
Yes.
That you either accept this as your future or you will not be in business. And
I had hoped that 5G would give us a way out.
It seems clearly they locked that down really early on.
And it was, so 5G technology was
last
headed
time in. You were here, we were very bullish on 5G.
Yes, it's going to take a while to get out there. The telcos are literally sitting on it now to make sure it fits their model so that it doesn't get out of control from them. I pasted a link into the chat room about this agricultural thing where different things are happening, but those people really, really need lots of access to data, because if you're flying drones over the crops looking for the right place and then you're going to administer, you know, fertilizers and pesticides according to what, you know, they're talking per tree in a fruit tree. You're talking about specifically treating each tree as a unique element instead of by the acre. And you need data transfers. And these people have vast cloud computing platforms with artificial intelligence and machine learning, blah, 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 cloud words, buzzwords, all that sort of stuff. And they need bandwidth. And without that, farming isn't going to have a renaissance.
You actually read Precision Ag? Advancing the global digital net agriculture.
And agriculture. But this article is in the general tone. There was an article specifically around John Deere.
Interesting.
And they made a representation to the FCC about they want.
Well, maybe there's hope if enough different stakeholders besides the telcos get involved and say, look, it's important to us too.
I think it's going to come down to when people realize it's bad for the country and bad for then perhaps
good for the telcos, bad for the country.
But it'll be slow, and it needs to be a wave of protest, effectively.
I think you're going to see a lot more politicians running on a pro or anti net neutrality stance.
Boy, that'd be very interesting.
And I mean, it's not going to be the key part of that campaign, but it is going to be a part in the way that it wasn't 10 years ago.
Well, you who are listening, have a vote.
Yep.
Use it.
For what it's worth, get in there and
these guys can't vote, but you can.
And it's only a US issue.
Yeah.
It's the, no one this else is the only place who's got this problem.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
It was
I just wanted to. That's something that a lot of people don't realize. It's not a problem anymore.
It is a U.S. issue.
Occupy Fiber, says one reason.
Occupy Fiber. Right on. All right, let's take a little break. Lots more to talk about. We haven't even gotten to Intel. Linus Torvalds. There's a battle brewing there. We could go for hours, but we got to take a break. We've got to take a break because, we just have to. Our show today brought to you by 23andMe. I am a fan. So much so, I did 23andMe. It must have been when they first started. It was started by, I want to say Ann Wojcicki. Susan Wojcicki or Ann? Was Ann? Her sister Susan runs YouTube. Ann was married to Larry Page, right? Or Sergey Brin. It's all confusing. Their mom, Esther Wojcicki, rented the garage to Sergey and Larry to start Googling.
Oh, sweet.
And they all met there. And Anne, who is brilliant and a microbiologist, is an entrepreneurial person. She started this company, 23andMe. The whole idea was inexpensive genetic testing. They figured out a way to you don't have to draw blood. You don't have to go to a doctor. You literally spit into a little plastic vial. It's not very big. Take you a second. You send it into them, and then based on your 23 unique pairs of chromosomes, they can tell you so much about yourself. It's really, you know, it's so great because it's really all about you. It's finally something all about you. Your genes, your genetics, your health and the ancestry. So you find out where your people came from. Find out how much Neanderthal you have. You can find out who relatives online. You can find out if you're lactose intolerant or if your genes say you should be or your genetic weight. Oddly enough, according to 23andMe, I should be underweight. I'm not living up to my potential here. But actually, what is really important is you can also read these genes and learn what you perhaps should do, make better lifestyle choices based on your wellness. I mean, this is great stuff. Fun, informative, and it's a great thing. I gave it for Christmas to my mom and my sister. I got to give it to my dad, my kids, because when my sister texted me, she said, I got my results back. And we shared our results back and forth. And it's fascinating. It is really, really great. 23andMe's Health Plus Ancestry Kit tells you everything you need to know, more than 75 online reports. And what I really like about it is they add more all the time. So in 2010, it was only in 2010, that a long brewing controversy in genetics was solved. Many, many scientists believed that Homo sapiens never interbred with Neanderthals, right? Mm-hmm. That we killed them off, but they were different species. There was no interbreeding. Then they found some Neanderthal genetic material, analyzed it, and whoa, they did interbreed. And as a result, a few years later, 23andMe started giving you a report on how much Neanderthal you have in you. I have 4%. 10 years ago, No one even knew this.
Yeah.
Like, this is, like, amazing. So this is an example of that.
And people who've done it in our office, the highest Neanderthal guy gets reminded about that a lot.
I am actually lower than 68% of other 23andMe.
Yeah, he's in the top 99%.
Wow. Is he a little hairy? Is he a little got beetle brow? Is there something going on that looks a little...
No.
Is he strong? Is he handsome?
Quite the opposite of what you would look at, expect a Neanderthal.
It's actually turning out that the Neanderthal genes that we carry were very important to survival of Homo sapiens. Thank goodness we interbred. There is more Neanderthal genetic material out there now than when the Neanderthals were still walking the earth.
Mm.
Because there weren't that many Neanderthals.
People, yeah,
there are a lot more people.
There's a lot more people than there are.
23andme.com/twit. They've actually got a deal, $30 off each Health Plus Ancestry kit, but it's only through the end of the month, January 31st. So now is the time. 23andme.com/twit. Honestly, if you've at all any interest in this, do it. And if your kids are studying genetics, what a great way to get them into it. They read the studies and they learn. You can even download the raw data and find out all sorts of stuff. Search for other markers. I just love it. 23andme.com/twit. Wow, I don't know where to... Stripe is ending support for Bitcoin payments this spring. What a surprise.
Have we found a use for Bitcoin yet?
Even so, I was reading a report, even some drug dealers are now abandoning the use
of
Bitcoin.
Oh, man, I can't tell.
It's the transmission.
The transaction time's like 2 days or something, and 20 bucks. No way I'm taking Bitcoin. Yeah. Even some drug dealers. That's the final indictment.
Yeah.
Even some drug dealers.
Drug dealers are refusing your currency, you know you're in.
It's dead. Let's see, what else? The Intel. I'm sure you have something to say about this, Greg. What do you tell your clients about the Intel Spectre meltdown issue? The most recent news is Intel saying, oh, whoops, our microcode fix, which you'll be getting via a firmware update on many computers, results in a, quote, higher than expected reboots and other unpredictable system behavior. They're pulling it back.
There's no way out of this that looks good.
It's terrible.
It's terrible, right? Now, keep in mind here, the thing is that Intel and a group of people knew about this for more than a year before it went public.
You know what? Steve Gibson found a paper in 1994.
Oh, the NSA paper.
That said speculative execution, it could lead to leakage of information.
Yep.
This is last year.
Yeah.
They knew about it 23 years ago.
Except nobody read the paper, perhaps. But, I mean, the thing is that the bug was actually disclosed
to the Chinese government.
Over a year ago.
Before us.
Yeah. And they still don't have a fix.
No.
So there's that, right?
Well, may not be a good fix. Is that conceivable that there's actually that no...
And short of disabling speculative execution.
Which would be a horrific slowdown.
Well, everything, basically all of the advances in C... I mean, Ian knows much more about this.
You go back to 1995.
Yeah, basically that's when you rip up Moore's Law from there on.
Oh my God. So it is a huge problem. I think at a higher level, I think there's a few things going on. One is they had over a year to find a fix for this and nobody... Nothing. Somebody's fumbled. Like Intel, obviously, has fumbled the fix.
Is it conceivable that there isn't a fix?
I think there's something they can do. I think some people have patched it. Like AWS seems to have put down patches into its systems.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think it's doable. I think what you got here was, you know, this is why Google's Project Zero was set up. You give companies a limited amount of time to sort this out. They sat on this for over a year. When we broke the story on the Reg, then there were people accusing us, how dare you do this? You know, there isn't a fix available. You're making everyone more unsafe. You know, you want to know what unsafe is when no one knows there's a problem and they can just sit on it.
And clearly it is unsafe because there was four separate research groups who discovered it effectively.
Yeah.
Coherently
within a couple of weeks of each other.
Now, so if there's not a hacker crew out there that's also found it, I'd be very, very surprised.
Also, we've told the Chinese government it's there.
Yeah.
You might as well have just said, here's our backside. Please kick it very hard, you know.
And then the exploits are out there. So there are.
Now, this is news.
So, no, it's been out ever since the day it was released.
Well,
People have been showing...
the proof of concept.
Yeah.
Mm. But there aren't any exploits in the wild.
Yes.
There are.
Yeah, but we're not hearing about them.
Mm. They're being suppressed?
I think people are taking a line of keeping it quiet.
Yeah, I mean, the traditional...
This is news to me. We've been saying all along, at least there's no exploits out there. There are.
There are.
Yeah, I mean, responsible disclosure generally means you don't tell anyone about the exploit until there's a patch available to fix it. and they still haven't got the patch. And you're right, that year-long delay, it's difficult to see how Intel could have sat on their hands for that long and not done anything about it. I think you're right, they've been working at it, but they haven't found a way to patch it, which doesn't cause a significant processor hit. Well,
and I think
weirdly enough, the patch they apparently rushed out causes reboots.
Yeah.
So it's not like they've been thinking about this for a year, or they would have known that.
We're also seeing the weakness in the supply chain here. So keep in mind, Intel makes CPUs and then reference architectures, and then hands it over to companies to glue the boards together, and then they get badged. So it's HPE,
same problem Android
Dell.
Has. There's too many people in the process.
The supply chain's too long and unstable.
Yeah.
So if Intel issues a patch today, then it has to go off to HP. Has to bag it up and put it into, you know, and ship it for a desktop, blah, 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 blah. And that's the weakness. The weakness is in this supply chain. So it's not only Intel we should be blaming here at part. It should also be the Windows hardware makers who sort of shove the box out the door and say, I don't want to see you again because that costs me money. I want to point the finger at them. Intel should...
Although if you're using a Lenovo or a Dell or an HP, those companies, those big companies are pushing out patches. Apple's been very quick.
Out a patch. It doesn't seem to be causing... I haven't seen anybody complaining.
The performance seems okay.
Yes, it seems okay, but we haven't seen people saying that OS X is now unstable.
No reboots.
Yeah.
So it is possible to patch this, or it would appear to be possible to patch this, but some people are fumbling the patches. Is it HPE and Dell and Cisco?
But here it's Intel saying, well, we don't.
Yeah.
It's our problem. So I'm...
Well, it is their problem. Everything's their problem for doing speculative
execution.
But Intel
has pulled back the patches that it was...
Yep.
Offering.
Yeah. So I would like to know if Intel's just taking the blame for this because its customers, the big makers, the computer makers, are saying, this is your fault, you've got to cop it.
Interesting.
And we won't sue you.
You're big on conspiracy theories about this thing.
No,
I've never heard anybody say that there are exploits in the wild.
Definitely.
There have to be. Because the proof of concept
code
is out there.
We just haven't heard about it.
Yeah.
Yep. We've seen the proof of concept code, and it's not...
Also, if the hackers are smart about it, they'll keep it so down low.
And frankly, it's most likely that it's targeted attacks that these would be most useful for.
Yeah, they'd be spearing.
It would be spear phishing, and it would be coming maybe from three-letter agencies.
I would
agencies.
Say hello to DOD, GCHQ, NSA. Yeah. They would just
know. They probably had this for years, frankly.
They have an exploit using this.
It's almost certain they would have had it for, in fact, I pretty much guarantee that they've had it for a year.
They would have known about it very early.
You know, if Intel comes to the government and says, look, we sold all these chips, one small problem with them, you know, and then...
The thing, from a business point of view, though, there's a really interesting thing here. This time, Intel's had a couple of bad spells where it's fumbled badly in the past, but it's managed to get away with it because its competitors weren't very strong. And what's different this time is we've seen AMD come out with quite a good processor, the Ryzen, is it, and the Threadripper and so forth, that's been very positively reviewed. Intel's been able to beat AMD by being a very aggressive, if somewhat unscrupulous, supplier of equipment, basically going to the makers and making it very difficult for them to buy AMD. But we're also seeing the arrival of ARM in the data center, right?
That's a terrifying thought for Intel.
Yeah,
because that's the only part of their x86 business
bastion.
That's growing. Now, I would think it unusual if the cloud companies were to walk away from x86. They just have such a phenomenal commitment to that platform and that software.
Yeah, but if
that
you're a cloud provider at this point, you're really wondering what
you're really
done.
Looking at ARM, you know, the 64 cores or the 128 cores.
But ARM has this problem too.
Yeah, but you can terminate the speculative conditioning and just thread it out onto the cores. Because there's so many cores in there, you don't need speculative execution to get performance. So if all of a sudden you're looking at a 6428 256 cored ARM that's clocking faster, like bigger, and the thing about Intel is that they clock their processors at multiple high levels of gigahertz,
right.
So they get the straight line, the drag racing performance.
Right.
Then all of a sudden you can just start threading out. You don't need speculative execution. You just say this one, go this one, this one. Does it make sense?
Yep.
So ARM's well-positioned.
It has
and,
more headroom
and
it can survive turning off speculative execution.
Let's not oversimplify what is a complex discussion. But we're also seeing things like ARM has SoftBank behind it. So it has money to throw at this problem that it never did before. So SoftBank bought ARM a few months ago, so they can now go out there and actually say, right, we're going to make a major push here and leverage off this. And AMD has a good processor. So Intel actually needs to do something about this so that it gets in front of it.
I was going to say, I've got a nasty feeling they're going to do exactly what they did when they got caught out by the Opteron, and they're going to use their large war chest and their market position to say, fine, you want to go to these other manufacturers, that's entirely your decision. Oh, those marketing funds, yeah, forget about those. And the discounts you're getting on the next process, yeah, those are gone.
They have huge leverage with OEMs.
And they've done it before and they'll do
but
it
not
again.
With cloud
they've gotten
companies.
In trouble with the EU.
That's true.
But not cloud companies. Remember, the enterprise...
They're building
IT
their own.
Is no longer the dog that wags that tail.
Is that because of things like Facebook's network solution where you build your own, essentially?
Yeah.
You don't,
OPM
you don't go to an OEM? Or why aren't the OEM? I mean, aren't they buying from OEMs?
Yes, they're buying directly from the manufacturer in China, who's typically manufacturing to their specific...
But Intel's marketing money is no good to those people.
No.
So they don't care.
So, they do use Intel. Intel spends a lot of money. Intel spends over $1 billion a year contributing to the Linux kernel. To make sure that it's optimized for the x86 CPU. So ARM needs to step up and start contributing.
Should x86 die?
Probably not. It just needs to work. It should work.
Should x86 work?
It's had a great run, it's got to be said. But whether or not there's something better along the line. The problem is the install base is so huge that when you know, actually going shifting to an entirely new technology is going to be a very long process.
Yeah.
And that's the cloud companies are capable. So they can start to say, over here is a group of and run services on ARMs. Mm-hmm. So, for example, instead of saying, up until now, we've always had VMs running on x86 servers the ESX hypervisor or KVMs. Well, over here, you might want to run a distributed database. And, there you are running the distributed database, and that happens to be running on ARMs, or your object storage. So there's no reason why the cloud companies can't actually take in the ARM processes for specific functions.
Cure for all this? Vegemite.
Marmite. You're drinking Marmite.
I'm drinking Marmite.
Sorry, eating Marmite.
I am drinking Marmite.
You are mainlining that stuff.
I know.
You're going to be on fire for hours and hours.
You watch it now.
It does something to you.
Before long, Leo, you'll be hanging outside the supermarket. Come on, just a pop, man. Really. I'm hurting.
I think I'm hooked. Wow, so this has been such a great show. I just think we should just hire these guys and forget everybody else. This is so much fun. I'm so glad to get the brains of you two. Greg Farrell, Packet Pushers is his podcast network. You can catch, is it packetpushers.net?
Packetpushers.net, yep.
You can see he's got a lot
weird.
To say.
But we're weird. Enterprise IT technology on that, that channel.
That's good stuff. Do you tweet on Ethereal Mind?
Yes, I do.
And maybe about stuff people would be interested in as opposed to... Enterprise?
Well, I do have a lot of snark on my Twitter feed. It must be said that I do let my inner opinions run wild.
I have the kings of snark in the room with me. The Snark Brothers. Because that's, of course, Ian Thompson's middle name. And he is at theregister.co.uk. I forgot you guys broke the Intel story.
Yeah.
And, I got to give you credit because at the beginning, we were saying, oh, surely the Register's overstating the 5 to 30% performance hit. Surely it's not as bad as that. In every respect, your story was accurate.
We got incredibly lucky in that when we broke it, we didn't hear from Intel for 5 days after first contact with them about this. We broke the story, still didn't hear from them, but then we heard from other journalists and financial analysts that Intel was briefing on background that this was just being made up by some batty British blog, and there's going to be no.
You got a lot of disks.
There's going to be no performance hit, and they were then coming back to us like, "Well, listen, this is what they're saying. What's your evidence?" And we're like, "Well, we've got this and this."
But you were absolutely right.
It was all very complicated, and then Google, God bless them, came out with that report showing, between about 5 and 30%, and it was an enormous.
Some cases, it's actually an understatement.
Yeah, I mean, in for some loads and some particular pieces of software. It's just, it's devastating.
Yes.
It was 250% on the Fortnite servers EA
runs. Some people's cloud bills are up by 30 to 50%.
Their costs.
So Amazon's patched, and they're now burning a lot more CPU, and they're being charged for it. Wow. So customers are pretty peeved. I do want to call that out. I mean, the Register is somebody who employs technically competent journalists.
Absolutely.
Right? And compared to other media outlets, which sort of employ people who can type, really
that's generous. I think I've seen the copy editing. Yeah. That some of them can't even type.
Yeah, but I mean, this is where journalism by competent, trained,
so important.
Savvy people varies from what we call mainstream media.
Yep. A big victory for the Register, and that's why everybody should continually check out the register.co.uk.
And we and the great titles.
Oh, well, thank you.
The great titles. I mean, honestly.
Well, we're recruiting in the US, so if anyone's got skills, yep. Yeah. If we're looking for a software and a hardware guy.
You're on the march.
Yeah. Oh, yes, we're expanding the US office. This is fun.
That is fantastic.
Because everyone in the industry is so highly press trained, they can't handle sarcasm and swearing. It's just.
You need people who can say, bye bye, Mr. Biker Guy drove my Chevy to the lefty, but the Chevy was awry.
Allegedly.
You need somebody who can write that.
Yeah.
Thank you both for being here.
Thanks.
Man, this was fun. I'm sincere. I just want to do this every week from now on. If we could only get you to come into the States. Are you going back home?
Here for another week. I've got a list of meetings all week. I'm meeting with clients and audience, people who listen to the show.
Great.
Getting my ear to the ground. More gossip and stuff. So, yeah.
Find those exploits. We want to hear about those. We want to hear about those. Ian Thompson, thank you all for joining us. Thank you also, we must say, to the very quiet and orderly.
Yeah.
Folks from the Canberra, did I say that right? Canberra Grammar School.
Canberra.
In Canberra, Maine.
Canberra.
Canberra.
B-R-U-H.
Canberra. Canberra. Thank you for the Vegemite. my new bicycle. And thank you to all our audience. We had a great studio audience today. Thank you all for those of you watching at home. If you're watching 3 p.m. Sunday, if you're around, that specific time, 6 p.m. Eastern, I think I'm drunk on Marmite. Is it possible? 2300
UCC. It's the endorphins.
It's
not drunk, it's endorphins.
You were told to put it on like Nutella, which I have to say is very cruel. But
you guys are mean. If you're around 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC, please stop by and watch the show. YouTube, Ustream. You know what? The easiest thing, go to our website, twit.tv/live, and you can choose your feed. That way, we even have an audio stream you can listen to live, so you can listen in the car or on the go. You could also, if you're going to do that, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. A bunch of great people in the chat room, and they always make it a lot of fun. If you can't watch live or be here live, by the way, if you'd like to, groups, individuals, whatever, email tickets@twit.tv. We'll make sure we have a chair out for you. We love having that live studio audience. Please, by all means, listen on demand. Go to twit.tv, our website. All of our shows are available in audio and video from the website. Or go to your favorite podcatcher like Pocket Casts or Overcast or Podcast from Apple or Google Play and subscribe. That way you'll get your episode the minute it's out each and every week. Thank you so much for being here. And we will see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Yay.